Aquaman and Superman, Animal Man and Plastic Man, Firestorm and Nuclear Man, Batman and Hawkman, 2D Man and Hour Man.
Who are all these people, man?
They're all part of the DC. Who's who? Ultra Boy and Booster Gold, Lightning Lass and Hippolyta, Phantom Stranger, Hitchcock and Arisian, Woody Winks.
Hey.
What?
What about that one guy?
What guy?
Mr. Pretzel, Mr. Lipstick, Mr. Mitzelfuzzle?
Mr. Mitzi's Pitlick?
Yeah, him.
He's also part of the DC. Who's who?
Hello, and welcome to a very exciting special episode of Who's Who, the definitive podcast of the DC Universe, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm one of your hosts, the Irritable Shag, and along with me is my co-host, the esteemed Rob Kelly. Are you excited, Rob?
I am quaking with excitement.
To be completely upfront, we've actually already recorded the interview, guys. So we're actually on the back end of this. We're riding a high of how much fun we just had. Having a discussion with who, Rob?
Chuck Patton.
Oh, my gosh. You folks, you're in for a treat. Now, I will say, if you're one of the new folks around here, if you just came to hear Chuck, and this is the first time you're listening to the podcast, the whole point of this show is we revisit the classic DC series, Who's Who, the definitive directory of the DC Universe. And we looked at all the editions from 1985 all the way through 1983. In previous episodes, we literally went issue by issue, page by page, I'm not kidding, and discussed every single entry. We've been doing this for 14 years now, and nowadays we're still producing new episodes quarterly, revisiting that original series, but in a randomized way. Now, Rob, why don't you tell the folks a little more about what we're doing today?
The time, May 1983. The place, Voorhees, New Jersey. A young Bob Kelly visits one of his favorite newsstands, Voorhees News and Tobacco. He picks up the latest issue of Justice League of America, his favorite comic series. The cover, by George Perez, is a beautiful poster-like shot of the team, giving no indication of the story inside. He doesn't bother to look inside the book because he buys JLA no matter what. He brings it home, expecting more art by Don Heck, who has more or less been the book's regular penciler for over a year. But no, instead, he sees a beautifully rendered splash page featuring Aquaman, no less, credited to someone named Chuck Patton. Chuck Patton broke into comics doing creeper backups in The Flash, but it didn't take long for DC to recognize his clean, crisp style would be perfect for the Justice League of America. And Patton would go on to be the artist during one of the biggest moments in that book's history, when the team broke up and then reassembled with a new lineup, quickly dubbed Justice League Detroit. He would stay on the book until issue 239, continuing to work almost exclusively for DC on titles like New Teen Titans, The Omega Men, Vigilante, and Who's Who. Chuck's work for Who's Who was uniformly superb, so we are taking a little break from our normal format to highlight that work and, more importantly, talk to the man himself.
So we go through Chuck's Who's Who entries. There's 17 of them that we're going to talk about, and we'll post those over on our gallery, which is the Fire and Water Podcast website. You go there and look for the gallery. You can just look for Who's Who, and all 17 entries will be there. We go through each one meticulously, and it's absolutely fantastic. And we're about to get to that conversation, but before we do, we got a little bit of housekeeping we have to do. We do need to take a second to thank our sponsors. Folks, this episode of Who's Who is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trade, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 42% off with free shipping on orders of $50 or more. Now, today, we're going to promote just one book called DC's Finest, which is these new collections DC's doing, Justice League of America, The Return trade paperback. And this collects several issues from the Justice League Detroit era. Now, it's not the earliest issues that Chuck was drawing, but it's still got some covers in there by Chuck, and he helped co-create this team. So it's well worth checking out. It collects JLA 241 through 261, Annual number 3, and Infinity 19. You've got, you know, writers Jerry Conway, JMD Mateus, Dan Mishkin, and others. Art by Luke McDonald, George Tuska, Bill Ray, and as I said, covers by Chuck Patton. The cover artist of this collection is Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. Praise be his name. Total page count is 584 pages. It's full color, soft cover. It's normally $39.99, but you can get it for 42% off, so it's only $23.19. So for this and all your other trade paperback needs, please visit InStockTrades.com. Now, this episode is also sponsored in part with your Patreon support. Because, you know, running the Firewater Podcast Network with so many shows requires a lot of online hosting and other services. And a while back, we realized we needed some help with the expenses. So we launched a Patreon, and you folks really stepped up to help keep the network going. And if you're enjoying the Who's Who podcast, the best way to support the show is by visiting our Patreon. What's that address, Rob?
patreon.com/FW podcast.
And while you're there, please consider supporting the network. And at certain tiers, you get mentioned on your show of choice, just like these folks who asked to be recognized on the Who's Who podcast. Our thanks go out to Al the Comics Guy, Damian Whiter, David Ace Gutierrez, Jeremiah Jones Goldstein, Mike Atchison,
Gord Tolton, Professor Chuck Coletta, Corey Balanecki, Noah Tarnow, Phil Becker, Steve Givens, and Tom Panarese.
Again, folks, please visit our Patreon at patreon.com/FW podcasts. So, folks, we are going to post all 17 of these entries on our website, on our gallery. So that's fireandwaterpodcast.com/who's who. You can see all the entries there. And by the way, going into this, just want to let you know that this is a very frank, very honest discussion, and there's a little bit of mature language. So if you're listening in the car and the kiddies are here, you might want to wait and listen next time. Or if you're at work, you know, and you're playing it out loud, just throw the earbuds in. Don't want your coworkers to maybe raise an eyebrow or two. All right, Rob, I think we've got all the business out of the way. What happens next?
We talk to the legendary Chuck Patton.
In 2011, the Irredeemable Shag and Aqua Rob Kelly teamed up to create the Fire and Water podcast. In 2016, they teamed up with Ryan Daly, the Franklins, and Siskoid to form the Fire and Water Podcast Network. A network built on teaming up needs a show about team-ups.
Marvel Team-Up.
Yes.
The Brave and the Bold?
You know it.
Marvel 2-in-1.
It's clobbering time.
DC Comics presents.
Of course.
Supervillain Team-Up?
Good idea.
Youngblood X-Force?
Technically.
FW Team-Up. Only from the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
So for those of you who are regular listeners to the Who's Who podcast, you know that Shag and I often disagree about a great many things, big things, small things, nerdy things, but we often disagree. And that is part of the secret sauce of this show, is the sort of salt and pepper tension here of the Who's Who podcast. But of course, we both love the Who's Who series. That's why we've been doing this show for 14 years. But one of the joys of doing the Who's Who is there are a handful of artists whose work we universally love. And every time we get to one of their listings, Shag and I are just waxing their car, whether it be Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. Praise be his name.
Praise be his name.
Jerry the Extraordinary Ordway, one of those people. Just every time we get to one of their listings, we are just like, let's just luxuriate in how awesome the artwork is for this listing. And luckily, we have another one of those people with us. And of course, we're talking about Chuck Patton. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
So excited to have you here. I'll just talk for myself for just a second. My first Justice League that I bought off the shelf as a regular buyer was the Justice League Detroit era. And yeah. It was you, man. It was you.
Yeah, no way.
Yes. That was what led me to. That's what led me to love Justice, a lifelong love with the Justice League. So thank you from my heart.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Now, this is stuff I needed to hear back in the day. I'm humbled by it, but you're like the fourth person who said that to me today. That my Lady Trey was their first GLA, which makes me feel even older because I had so much more GLA in front of me and behind me that it was like, that one was your first? You know? Not George Perez? What's wrong with you?
Anyway. So I have GLA number 217 sitting on my spinner rack to my right as I record this. And the George Perez cover, and I told the story in the intro. I remember going to my local newsstand. Justice League, I never missed it. I bought it, and I was expecting Don Heck because he had been sort of the regular artist for over a year. And I opened the cover, and I went, who the hell is Chuck Patton? This looks awesome. What the hell? It was so exciting. So, again, if you're uncomfortable getting really, really praised, this is going to be a tough hour and change for you, because I think that's all Shag and I are really going to be doing here. So.
I think I'll suffer through it.
All right, excellent. All right. So let's get rolling on these listings, because there are so many to talk about. So I'm going to go first. And by the way, everybody, we're going in alphabetical order. A couple of these obviously are from the updates, but we're just slotting them in A to Z just to make things organized easily to find the listings. And we're going to have these on the gallery so everybody can follow along as we're listening. So, of course, the first one, Aquaman by Chuck Patton and Dick Giordano. Now, I have a question for you that's probably going to cover a lot of these listings. Because, you know, I don't keep asking the same question. We don't keep asking the question 16 times. When you were either assigned these or you asked for them, did they tell you who was going to ink you before you ever took on the assignment?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. This one in particular, because when Who's Who, I was still, and it's refreshing to be able to say it now. At the time, I felt a little intimidated. I was totally a rookie. This was my first major year in comics. And I don't think this is where my memory has lapsed on me. I can't remember if we were just starting. We had to be starting Justice League Detroit, because I don't think they would have given me Aquaman to do it if it wasn't. And everybody had high hopes on who's who anyway. I mean, in my mind, I thought they were going to go out and get, I mean, it could have got Apparel, they could have got Nick Hardy, who are my two favorite Aquaman artists. Absolute favorite Aquaman artists. But I was honored and really impressed that they asked me. It was Len Wein. Len Wein asked me directly to do it. And then really put the flowers or the candles on that cake. He said, Dix is going to ink you. Dick is going to ink you. I'm a happy. How was that? I mean, he was my mentor. He's the guy that gave me the job. He got me into the doors. He turned me on to Lynn, to Marv, to George. I mean, we've talked about this. I got to step aside for a second, because the first time you interviewed me, and I got to thank you, because that's what got me back out there talking about me, talking about my career, when I had basically kind of, I thought, burnt the bridge on it. And you're coming and having me on the JLA, on your post, that got me to open up. So, I mean, basically put a lot of demons to death, brought back a lot of love for me in my comics career. Not that I ever loved it, but I was kind of embarrassed for many years once I got an animation. And it was just funny, because every time I wanted to turn my back, it was always in my face. And that's the thing that got me fame anyway, because I was both the comic book guy and the animation guy. So I got to thank you, Rob, for that post.
Goodness.
It also brought my fiance and I together, which is another story. I'm not going to bring her up because, oh gosh, she'll be here all forever telling you our backstory. But it's just ironic that now we're doing this. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, when was that? All I remember was when they were deciding on who the first ones are going to the pages of Who's Who, I was grabbed immediately for Aquaman. And having Dick ink it was, again, that was, Dick has always and will forever be my favorite inker. And the person who I always saw myself, when I see what he did to me, that was the way I've always wanted to be seen. And it didn't matter who else inked me. I mean, I have my list of people I can't stand ink me. I mean, the guys who work with me, they some of them are my fans, and they love when I just go off, you know. But, they sit there. We used to have a wall of Chuckisms that they just put out there when I was saying about things. And but on my golden list, Dick is number one.
That's so fantastic.
The drawing was my really, like, I honestly literally went to town with my fanboy going nuts. And I was trying to channel Apparel. I was trying to, Cardi was my first major Aquaman guy. So I was trying to channel that, but I love Apparel's approach. So anyway, so that's why Aquaman is so damn important, still is for me.
Oh, music to my ears, Chuck.
I've been Aquaman ever since. It's been so weird. I've never done a miniseries or anything, but you know.
I mean, first of all, like this is something that Shag and I chronicle across Who's Who, where there were particular artists, and we say, I've never seen a bad art job by X, right? You know, look, everyone has that off day, you know, some people, you know, you don't get it done. You don't have a lot of time. Dick Giordano was one of those people that you're like, I've never seen a bad inking job by Dick Giordano. Just never. No matter whose pencils he's doing, he's making it a little bit better. And I'm going to wax your trident here and I'm going to try and keep it cool after this, but we're starting right at the top. If someone said, gun to my head, what are your three Aquaman images that you would want to own? You had all the money in the world. You had three Aquaman images. What would be your top three original art of Aquaman that you'd want to own? This is one of the three. There's one by Alex Ross and one by Jim Aparo and this one. Wow. This one. Because this piece is so beautiful. And it's just everything about this character, right? You've got the serpent going on, and there's so I have one question to ask, and I forgive you. At the end of this is 40 years ago. You may be like, I don't friggin' know you, nerd. But in the background, right, you've got the trident, above Aquaman, and the trident was not really something that was in. Really part of Aquaman that much until they gave him the superpowers toy because they needed an accessory. And I guess they thought, was that an influence from superpowers or that was your own idea?
That was more of an influence, I would say, from this is a tough one. I can tell you more about that damn seahorse than it came. Seahorse was easy. That came from the Aquaman cartoon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
Storm.
Oh, yeah. We love Storm. And, of course, Topo. And I was glad. I love Topo, but I'm so glad I didn't have to draw his ass. You know, holy shit. Oh, I got a silhouette in there.
I was going to say, we do have a silhouette.
Yeah, I snuck that in.
Silhouettes are always good.
I'm trying to remember why I did the trident. I know in the back of my mind, my little nerd mind, there was always this potential of, if Aquaman had to take on Namor, Namor has got a trident. He's king of East Atlantis. I want Aquaman to have a trident. And yeah, I think by irony, superpowers did come out and we're all grabbing those. I mean, I don't think, did I ever get any swag from DC on that? I must have, but I know I had them. And I love that they gave him a trident. And I think I just elaborated on the trident. Because, goddammit, he's the king of Atlantis, you know?
All right. Makes total sense.
And the detail on the trident is amazing. Absolutely gorgeous.
Totally made up on the spot. I'm shocked. Don't ask me to do it again. I couldn't do it.
Wow. I do have a question about the sort of the layout of this one, because this is Who's Who number one. This is the first issue coming out of the gate. Yeah. Do you, and again, it's 40 years, so I totally understand if you're like, I don't know, kid. But
kid.
Kid. Coming at this...
You know, I'm an old man, but that's okay.
we're old too, Chuck. Nobody's calling us kids anymore.
There's not a lot of hot hair follicles on this side of the microphone. But did they have guidelines already for you on the size? Did they already kind of know, like, we're going to do this much text, you get this much room for art, or was it just kind of a figure out as you go thing?
Yeah. We had there was a general text. That was a cool part. Again, I'm going to be talking about waxing your trident. For me, the greatest editor, the teacher, the best teacher I had coming into comics was Lynn Wing. And I mean, Lynn would tell me straight up, we would sit there and have these long conversations about the size compositions of each JLA member. So I knew that the tallest was Hawkman. He was 6'4". Superman was 6'2". Batman was 6'2", because they were almost like twins, which we would go off on that, the symbolism of that crap. But, and that... really, especially when I got into animation, proportions and size, that's an obsession of mine. I wanted always to have a sense of silhouette. And I got that from Lynn. So coming to this composition, I already knew how tall Aquaman is supposed to be, 6'1". We always had to play smidgen numbers. And again, as much as I liked Aquaman, we couldn't have him overshadow Superman. We couldn't have him overshadow Batman. They're going to be overshadow him anyway. But it would always crack me up that Hawkman with the damn wings and the hand, they still overpowered all of them. And nobody really thought about that. I've seen other artists do it. I didn't hear Lynn talk about it with them, but we definitely got into it with me. And it's like he was just totally grooming me on being this guy. The other guy who was my spiritual advisor, who I didn't get, Dick was too busy to get hands-on with this. So it was all Lynn. But the other guy who definitely was hands-on for me without being there was Garcia Lopez.
Ugh.
Because by then I had gotten my I tell the story about how I got my copy of the DC Style Guide. Dick had one in his office, and I would come in and both kind of like, you know, sit at the foot of the teacher, but also to read that damn book. I was just over. And then one day he goes, "Take the damn thing home." And I goes, but it's yours. He goes, "No, it's yours now." And that was my graduation present. So,
Oh my God.
The stupid thing I didn't do, I should have had him autograph it because it was his personal copy. And then years and years later, when I'm producing a show, and one of my artists, who's one of my favorite artists I've worked with, I forgot if we were doing Spawn, the second Spawn, or we're doing Dead Space. Because of his monumental work he did, I gifted him that book.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And he always kept asking, "I can give it back, you know, I can give it back." I'm like, "No, dude, Dick passed this on to me because it inspired me so much." That was the thing that got me on how to get the costumes right, because that book is so, it was a Bible, man. It was a Bible.
Yeah.
And DC didn't even know that. I mean, this is what you give the manufacturers. Screw the manufacturers. The artists need this, you know, because Garcia Lopez did such an amazing job on head turns and texture and this and that. And then Dick inking it. And to me, that was the definitive Bible of the DC universe. And so I try to, my goal always have been to not just emulate him, but to carry that on. So whatever Garcia Lopez established, I felt that's canon, man. I'm going with that. So wow. My version of Aquaman is, yeah, a little, obviously me, but definitely guided by Garcia Lopez with input by Len Wein. And wow. Then brought all together by Dick Giordano. To me, you can't get any more classic than that.
No, man. Oh, all right. So I have two questions about the Who's Who, which I think will cover kind of most of the listings. But there is one aside I want to make. Just the idea of you sitting there having a conversation with Len Wein about the various heights of the JLA members, I would be like, "This is my job. I'm at work right now. I'm talking about how tall Hawkman's wingspan is, and I'm officially employed. This is the best thing ever."
Oh, it pretty much summed up my first year after I got out of to my mind, I wanted to stay a new talent, but Dick graduated me. He basically kicked me out.
Wow.
I thought he was going to kick me out of the building. I tell this story too much, so I'm telling a variation of it. But that was when I got my graduation, and he sent me to Lynn. And then from there on, Lynn took over. And so, yeah. And wow. Then when I would go home at night with my assignments, just the idea that I went from a crappy job where now I can go up to, and I can't think of the number, the address of D.C., but it was Radio City Music Hall. And that I can go up there now. And I'm allowed to go past the doors. I can go into his office. I was now a part of the family. If I wanted to, to my mind, it was my family. I was a DC guy since I was a baby. I mean, I liked Marvel. I read Marvel. I have my favorite Marvel books. I was a comic fan, but I was a DC baby. And here I am now having those conversations. And it would blow me away. Sometimes it was overwhelming because I knew where I came from. I knew that I never thought I would get to this place. And now I'm in this place, and it's a business. And I was reminded of that by a bunch of other great guys, that it's a business. That this isn't some fun place, you know. Although there are times when I was sitting there and I go, "This is so stupid. This is so giddy." You know, we're making comic books, and that was my dream. And wow. Then to draw Aquaman. I mean, of all the Who's Who, this one's significant. The irony is that I had the original pages. That original page last year, and unfortunately I had to sell it. But I they didn't sell it the way I wanted to, but you know, what can you do? I did sell something else to a good friend of mine, so I was happy about that. But yeah, I held on to this for over 40 something years.
Oh, I checked my bank account when it came up, when I saw it on your Facebook page. I did a quick, like, like, no, that's not going to happen. How much plasma can I sell? Okay, so there's two more questions anyway, again, which are going to
stop me when, because I go on forever.
Oh, yeah, I mean, right. We're not going to spend a half hour in every listing, I promise. But there's just two more questions that, again, are going to cover kind of the whole rest of them. One is, were you given any indication about where they were going to put a logo, or did they just, you didn't worry about that at all? And that was, down the line.
That was part of the primer of doing this. Like with comic book pages, I found my original tryout pages for JLA where I had left a way too much space at the top for the balloons. And you start learning it. You do it enough to all of a sudden it becomes secondhand. But again, for Who's Who, We were lucky to know the format. Everybody, Lynn set it down, and then Bob Greenberger would kind of back him up. And I think Barbara Kiesel was involved too. A couple other editors, they all knew the format. So when you got your assignment, you were told, okay, you're going to get half a page of this, or maybe this. This is going to be a horizontal. This is going to be a vertical. This is only going to be a half page. I've done some half page ones too. And so we knew they're going to use the logo. You just had to realize, like with anything you draw, you got to have an area where there's going to be dead space. I'm grateful. I mean, originally I wasn't going to put that trident there, but I knew it needs something to lock this down. And I realized I was inadvertently doing a kind of box composition with Aquaman slashing through.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew, perfect, his logo is going to go over his head, but it just still felt kind of empty just having his logo. So the trident really cemented it. And that was kind of an inadvertent thing. I remember Lynn going, hey, happy accident or something like that. And I was like, he must have read my mind. You know, like, this is going to work. And so to answer your question, we were towed, and the artists tried to accommodate. That's the best thing we can do is accommodate.
Okay.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it didn't.
And then the one other one is, I assume that all the surprint images was done on a separate piece of paper, and then we put it together.
Mean, these were the heady days of printing, where this was called there was a fancy name we used to call it. It was offset, but it was it would hit me eventually.
This isn't the flexographic process you're trying to think of, is it?
Well, no, it's the separation.
It
was the flexographic was part of that, because I remember the complaints were we went from steel plate printing to flexographic being more plastic. So you got a little more, you can play with more color, but they were worried about, it was sloppy. And it was a lot of work, a lot of on paper, because we weren't into the Baxter paper yet. We used to call it the Baxter paper. Its official nickname was the Camelot paper, because that's where they first started it on.
Right.
Everybody wanted to do something like Camelot paper. I just found a ream of it a month ago, and just... I'm sitting there and go, I don't know what I'm doing with this, but I got drawn it. It's the last of its kind. It will never be found. There was that. And then when you did this process, I remember one of the editors bitching, going, it's expensive. And I goes, yeah, but hey, it's worth it to have this two-color printing. And so I did what it was, I was told to draw the background. Because this was two pieces, and I had to draw the background on vellum.
So it was done on vellum. Okay, I was wondering if that was the case.
I was originally starting to draw it. I think I got as far as the rock that was being pushed, and that's when Lynn said, no, separate it. Oh, shit. So because this was before Photoshop, and all that, this is all by hand. So I had to sit down. I don't think even had a light box then. I think they had a light box. Light boxes were very, very, there weren't a lot of them. So, in production, they would have them, but at home, buying in your own place on DC money, how you kidding? I remember talking to Clarice Cullins about crap like this. I mean, we thought we were advanced by having lap boards, and lap boards with any piece of damn paper, wood you can put across your lap and draw it.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing fancy about it. And then the art stores started getting slick and started selling you overpriced fancy lap boards. You can just go to a lumber store and just get a great piece of paper, wood, and it worked better.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
All right.
The process was kind of a It was new.
All right. Okay. Sorry, everybody. I did not mean to spend a half hour on Aquaman, but I couldn't help it. So, Shag.
It's my time. I'm going back 40 years and remember something that I don't know what I'm in. So
yeah.
Speaking of going back, I've got a deep question for you, sir, on this next one. The next character we're going to talk about is Bwana Beast.
Oh, God. Sit back, get a drink. This is going to be good.
Well, I mean, it gives you a whole lot of, but what? Like, I mean, what drew you to this character? Did you request this character? Were you assigned? And actually, that sort of applies to a lot of these. Like, how many of these did you request a character versus how many of these were you assigned?
Aquaman, I inherited. I was given, and I was so, and that boosted my confidence. So that Lin said, what do you want to draw? And again, the beauty of Lin Wein, working with Lin Wein, was he asked me. I got spoiled because of that. And this was another one when I did Aquaman, everybody was excited about it, and I was feeling woo. You know, I think I got more excited about this in my JLA pages. And he goes, what's the next one you want to do? Now, I'm still feeling my inner 10-year-old, and I go, I want Bwana Beast.
So and you asked for this. That's wild.
Yeah. I didn't want to make it easier on you. Yeah, I asked for this, dude. I begged for this. There's a lineage with me and Bwana Beast that I hope I don't take too long. And stop me if I do. But long story short, I mean, you know, the original artist on Justice League was Mike Sekulski.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved Mike Sekulski's work. I was one of the few. I mean, to me, he was DC's Jack Kirby because he was so prolific. Maybe not as creative, certainly not as strong as, but it doesn't matter. I loved him. I effing loved his work. And one of the books that I grew up reading as a kid was Bwana Beast. I just love that book. And I know, here, black kid from Detroit looking at some white guy just like sometimes. A weird ass helmet, and he can combine animals, you know, in his mind.
Right.
I don't know. I love that shit. Can I curse?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm usually asked first, you know, that's the years of television. Should I keep it PG or can I go R? So I'm going to go R. Anyway, I love this shit. So, so Lynn's like, okay, we're going to do Bwana Beast. Also, what was coming up was the DC Challenge.
Right.
And once again, Lin went, who do you want to do? Bwana Beast. Because the goal of that was to throw off the next group. So whoever you brought on, you did it to basically F up the next guys picking up the ball, trying to solve this thing. It was a great idea that was unfortunately really messy and really, in the long run, sucked. But I think at the beginning, those of us who were doing it, we earnestly went into it trying to make it fun. And I went into, again, I tapped into my old DC thing. So doing this for Who's Who, was how I got stuck with Bwana Beast. And I asked for it. And I wanted it. And I drew it. And I tried to draw it. I knew you were going to ask me this. I'm going to tell you anyway. Instead of drawing it something like I would do it, again, my thing has always been to pay homage to the person who had touched me with that character. So I tried to draw this as the way I was trying to imagine myself being Sekulski. So the body's a little jerky, you know, but I loved it. And it didn't come off as well. Now, inking wise, I couldn't get Dick because Dick was inking God knows everything. And Dick would do this. He wouldn't tell you he was going to ink something. He would just do it. And he was president. I mean, he was senior editor. Who was going to tell him no? But he had to be, you know, it was spoiling me because just like he'll ink you one time, it doesn't mean he's going to get you again. He had brought other people along, and one of them was Rick Magyar. And I always liked Rick's stuff. And Rick did this, and I was pretty impressed. Who's Who really spoiled me or made me feel, really spoiled me, because when I got on JLA, that whole revolving inker was a nightmare.
Yeah.
Well, Who's Who was fun. I got to work with people I never usually work with. And I got to request people I didn't want to work with. So.
Well, I'm glad you addressed the art there, because I was wondering, because this does feel a little different than some of your pieces. I didn't know if maybe that was more the influence of the inker or whatnot. But so this takes me to another one of my questions, too, which is when you get assigned or choose a character like this, I mean, he had last appeared ages ago. Did you have reference on hand? Did DC provide you with reference? Or did you just remember this perfectly and knew it to draw?
Both. I mean, here's the thing. They have what we have, and of course, we had a Xerox, you know, because it wasn't like you're going to get a file or anything. You got a Xerox. We also had, and I thought we were blessed, and I really wished I could have worked with him more. In the DC offices, there was a man named E. Nelson Bergman.
Oh, yeah.
And E. Nelson was a literary, if Lynn knew a lot about the DC history, E. Nelson was a venerable, I mean, he was a living computer. He also had, and he, I remember him showing me once, it was like being shown the vault. We had bound copies of every DC comic in leather book form.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in charge of that. He was the guy who kind of helped facilitate that. So if you had a question, the editors would just ask him. He would just love to show you. And I went out of my way to go see. So if I had a question of something, he would show me the damn book. And then we'll make copies of it. And then some of this I got from him. But again, because it's Bond of Beast and I grew up on the son of a bitch, I knew what he looked like. I had him. I was going to do this right. And Lynn would tease me. Like, who else would ask for fucking Bond of Beast with you? You know, metamorpho, but you know, I mean, Ramona Freyden's getting that. So I'm,
Right.
And I loved her work. So anyway, I was a stone cold DC freak as a kid.
Well, one of the things we talk about in this show, too, is some of the legacy of Who's Who, because we think that Who's Who helped elevate a lot of characters that people would have forgotten about.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'd put money down right now that this Buona Beast entry that you drew played some kind of role in Grant Morrison deciding to pick up that character again in Animal Man about 5 years later and say, you know, here's a character we can do something with. Because I think just seeing the image jog something in people, and I think there's a lot of entries that really helped result in stuff later. And I think you sort of may have had a hand in keeping Buona Beast around and becoming Freedom Beast.
I'm going to take that, but I don't know for sure. But I suspect I wouldn't be surprised. A lot of the new the British writers who were coming in were all also big fans of the ODC.
Mm-hmm.
So. Whether it was Alan Moore, whether it was Grant Morrison and those guys, they had a real healthy approach. The newer guys, you know, they wanted to do what they're going to do. I can't speak for him. I only know one really well. And he was, and that was Paris Cullors. And we would, you know, wax politically about what worked, what didn't. And, but I knew with the British guys, you can give them anything. They would love it. They knew about it. And I remember talking in Paris about Doll Man, how much he's so outrageously stupid. I loved it. Well, just the idea he'll shrink to a certain size. And then, you know, Adam made more sense to me than Doll Man.
Right. No, totally. By the way, Paris is another one of those that we wax his car when we come across his entries as well, because they're great.
Yeah. And well-deserved. He was amazing. And we haven't talked in a while, but yeah, it's like I always, you know, that was probably one of the closest and most fun associations I had, other artists I had met when I was in DC. But to go back to Buona Beast, if I did, I mean, I even like what they've done now, especially like what they've done now, because now I can't remember if he's Brother Beast now or Citizen Beast or whatever stupid. They don't want to call him Buona, which bothers me. I get it. I mean, it is a derogatory word in some respects. So long as he's a beast, I'm happy. As long as he's still got the damn helmet, I'm happy.
That helmet's so important, right? And the ripped chest.
Oh, man, I love that. Even the damn ape he had, which is hilarious. You know, I loved all that. That's what Lynn just, he loved it. I loved it. And that brought his infection. And he got he was just affectionate about it as well because of it. And that's how, and if we fired everybody up on it, that was great. That's exactly what we're supposed to do. And I agree. I think everything about Who's Who revitalized the entire line of continuity.
I'm trying to pick. Go ahead, Shane.
No, I was just saying, I think you're right. I think it brought a lot of people a lot of ideas. I was then going to segue from, you know, the insanity of Wannabeast to one of group of your characters. Rob, you want to start us off on the next one, or did you have something you wanted to ask?
There is one other thing I wanted to say about this, because you're just mentioning Ledwin, which was, I'm picturing Len kind of screwing with you a little bit, of like, you come to him for Wannabeast, and he's like, well, there are a lot of requests for that. I guess I won't give it to Jack Kirby or Jose Luis Garcia Lopez or Frank Frazetta asked about it, but I guess I'll give it to you, Chuck. Like, if he really wanted to like layer it on and make you feel like special, he could be like, well, you know.
No, Len played much more interesting Machiavellian games than that.
Pablo Picasso asked about this, and we thought maybe we could give it to him, but we'll give it to you, Chuck. It's fine. So,
can we do his version of that? Is actually coming up, and I don't know if I should just jump ahead and tell you who it was.
Oh no! Oh, let's. Oh, I can't wait to get to it now. Okay, all right.
So,
let's go your way, because I can run my mouth. I have all the time in the world.
So now, all right, next up is the cadre, of course, characters, along with our unfortunately dear departed Jerry Conway. I mean, obviously, you were always going to do this from the get go because these are your characters.
You know, I felt very shortly. I mean, yeah, God bless Jerry and rest in peace.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful to God to see him and kind of put aside a lot of my old animosity that I felt when I left the book. It wasn't even animosity, it was disappointment. It was a lot of disappointment. And I didn't even want to talk about Vibe. If you notice, I didn't do Vibe. But Cadre came up, and I was – something said, well, dude, this is your one – you know, if you die tomorrow, this is the one contribution of yours purely that came from you. So you need to do this. I would hate to have someone else. I was going to say names with that. If I said it, it'll sound like I'm making fun of that person, and chances are I probably would. But I'm not going to say that. I'll just say I needed to draw this, and these were my guys. And I tried to put that love that I initially felt with Jerry when we created it, and I'm grateful I did, very grateful. So, yeah, there are my guys. I wished – it's funny. I get people – my biggest disappointment is that I was hoping someone would do better with them than what we did. I don't think we got to do any of the potential they could have, and I was always hoping to see somebody did, and I have not seen that, so – oh, well.
I'm pretty sure the Overmasters come back a few times, but I don't know that they've really done him justice. Yeah.
I mean, it's them, and I hear a lot of derogatory. It's not derogatory, but it's like there's chiding, and yet there's so this sort of indie that they want to do Crowbar. And to me, Crowbar is the least of the bunch. He was always meant to be the least of the bunch. I mean, the guys who I thought should have been played up more are the ones ignored. Fastball, Black Mass, I wanted to see more with. The other girls, I can't think, Strike. I wanted to see somebody come in and really have fun with it, and they didn't. They all, first thing out of their mouth is Crowbar. Why?
I always thought Shatterfist kicked ass. Like, I thought it looked cool, great name, like everything about it. I was like, this guy's awesome.
And I feel grateful. And this is why I'm saying the lines blur, because that was completely for me. I gave Jerry all of those guys. There wasn't one. I think Overmaster was the only thing that was from him. And then we elaborated on it together. But everybody else I picked and I came up with. And I was tapping hard into my... It's funny, DC, but it was like tapping hard into Marvel. I wanted to Marvelize these villains.
I can see that, yeah.
I wanted them to be more physical. I wanted them to be, because DC guys tend to be, I got power, and throw power at you. I got power. I got this. I got an icicle gun. which brings me to, you know, I'm glad. I mean, when I had to do the JLA, crossover, I was trying to get that same feeling that Sikowski got, and it just became a no school. Let's just say it was less than exciting for me. A lot of the 1940 characters were like, why are we drawing Icicle? What's his name? With the Icicle gun. He always drove me nuts. And, you know, Johnny Thunder. What the hell is that about? So that was me. So I'm going to give you a little bon mot of my brain as I was doing these things.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's a great piece because you've got seven figures in a tiny space, and yet it is not crowded. That's, you know, that's hard to do. Not everybody's able to pull that off.
But see, now you're getting into Lin Wein's twisted mind, because I wanted so bad just to draw a single character. And he kept getting me into group character situations. I did not. So you had to learn. You had to learn to compose and think and storytell in those compositions. And some of it I think I failed, and some of it I think I did pretty good.
In this one, did you decide, by the way, I'm a sucker for a floating little head on the side, by the way, like totally, I'm an easy mark for that. Did you decide to do the floating little heads, you know, profile shots, or was that part of the format?
No, that's, to me, that's the lineage of JLA.
Okay.
JLA was the first to do the floating heads on the side. Lin told me that we are going to do that, and you're going to make your stamp on it. And I was excited to do it because, God damn it, if Mike Sikowski could do it, if Dick Dillon could do it, then I can do it, damn it. And George can do it, then I can do it. And now I'm part of the, it's my legacy, you know? So the floating heads, the villains as or heroes as fingers, that was a old trope of JLA. Mm-hmm. I got to do all of that. So.
Very cool.
Since everyone else said their favorites, Fastball and Black Mass are actually my favorites of the group too, by the way.
Thank you. Black Mass just got completely ignored. I mean, I wanted him to be a reverse Hulk. In other words, up, his intelligence got more, as opposed to, you know, he started as this little dweezil, kind of a lab assistant, but then when he bulked up, he became like the maestro. And I wanted that, and Jerry completely missed the ball on that.
That's unfortunate.
Well, even with Shatterfist, I mean, I really wanted this guy was going to be a man. He was, to me, I wanted him to be the anti-Iron Fist. And we never got a throwdown like that. Fastball, I had a little moment with him on Aquaman, which I had a lot of fun with. That was the only thing I could say, okay, that was how I envisioned it. The rest, not at all. The way I wanted it to.
Anyway. So anything specific? Like, one of the things I find interesting, you've got a lot of different inkers here. So far, you know, we're in our third entry here. We've talked about Dick Giordano. We've talked about Rick Magyar. This one's Mike Macklin. For each, like, what do you feel Mike Macklin pulls out of your pencils as an anchor?
Okay, I'm going to get in trouble here.
Uh-oh.
This is one of those spoiler alerts. Because even though we got this in order, originally my next one after Buona Beast was Congo Bill.
Okay.
So Cadre didn't come till later. Cannon and Sabre didn't come till later.
Right.
Yeah.
But... So to go back to Cadre, I got Mac Macklin because he was put on JLA with me because I was honestly complaining about the inking I got. The editor I had, who wasn't Lin Wein, and I won't say names, but you know, let's say the editor I had at the time was, to me, not an artistic editor, not a real creative editor. He knew how to edit. He just never done comics. And I've always wanted that synergy I saw everybody else get. I wanted that sense of an anchor who worked with me and I knew what they're. I wanted someone I can learn from and grow with. And I just kept getting people, well, you worked well with Jerry Ordway. I'm not Jerry Ordway. I love Jerry's work, by the way. I'm going to say that right off. Love Jerry's work. I love what Mike did with it. Mike and I were not the right couple.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I picked the wrong one to ask about.
No, that's a good one because I got to be, I've been reminded by my sister, I'm going to be 70 this year. And you get to a point when you go, hey, I've been a nice guy all my life. The gloves come off now.
You are out of F's to give, sir.
I have no more F's to give. I have a whole lot of S's to give. So I'd rather be open. I've sat around with a lot of this stuff, and especially when I got into animation, you really had to speak up. I developed a personality called the director. The director has saved me in many meetings, and now he's the guy going, no, say it. Because I'm saying that to my artists whenever they're holding back. Stop holding back. I did a lot of holding back when I was in comics. I was very disappointed. I think if I became a squeaky wheel, I think I would have got more than what I wanted. I found a great editor anchor, and I was told I couldn't have him.
Hmm.
Which is interesting, because going into, I'm going to jump ahead, because Cannon and Saber, that came later. I didn't get that in order. I got Cannon and Saber probably a year later.
Yeah, they were they're from the updates. Yeah.
Well, they're from issue
26. Not from the updates. They're from the catch up.
Yeah, issue 26, the appendix. Yeah.
And I was doing Vigilante then, so that's why. I mean, that was another thing. And that was the other rule. You didn't draw something unless you were associated with it, which was kind of a weird when I was given Buena Vista, because nobody was. But nobody was going to ask Sikowski at the time. He was still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, I spoke up because, and years later, I got to meet Sikowski and finally give him his roses. And that's another story I won't go into, unless we have time. But so when I got Buena Beast, that was me paying homage to the guy who inspired me. So I felt like I wanted this to feel, yeah, it's me, but it's like my Sikowski. I'm doing my Sikowski. And I'm not just aping him. I'm inspired by him. So that was another criteria. And Lynn kind of played that up. If you felt strongest about it, he'll give it to you. But 9 out of 10, the edict was, you only drew something you did or was associated with. So obviously I had to do Cadre. Cannon and Saber, yeah, because I was doing Vigilante. But Congo Bill, another one where it was like, well, shit, what else you want to do? And we were doing Who's Who at the time, and I was on a roll where I loved the Jungle Books of DC. And Congo Bill, to me, isn't Congo Bill I really wanted to do. It was Congorilla.
Right, right.
A sentence that's never been uttered before.
I know. Again, dude, why do you have to go there? You know, it's like, well, again, I had a lot of those reprints, and Congo Bill was boring as hell. He was Jungle Jim ripoff. But Congorilla, that was nuts, you know. Let me rub my ring, and I put my brain in a golden gorilla. I love that. So that's how I got Congo Bill. And then to sweeten it, Lynn goes, I'm going to get you somebody special to ink it. He made a mistake of going, who would you like? And there was a couple of old vets walking around who I absolutely love their work. Frank Giacoa. I'm probably saying his name. I always heard it as Giacoa. But I love Frank Giacoa's work. That was another person who I saw, and I saw myself. Like how I said, how Dick inked you the way you want it to be seen. I thought Frank Giacoa would do the same for me. And he was always under a huge deadline, but he was working off some things for DC, and he was willing to do this. And he did it, and I was so happy with that entry. I love that work. I wanted to get, and I went immediately to the lake. Can we put him in GLA? Can we? Because no, I can't. We can't, you know. And that was a heartbreak, because I really wanted to work with him.
Well, that profile shot of Congo Bill in the background and the surprint, I mean, that's like a Hollywood leading man from the 40s. He looks so good. You guys, the combination of you two just are stunning.
Well, it's funny because it's like, you know, I mean, again, this was me channeling my 10-year-old self of all the Buena Beasts, the Jungle Gems, the Bamba, the Jungle Boy, the Tarzan Sunday morning shows, all that stuff I grew up with in those kind of comics, Jungle Jim. I had fun with that. But again, personally, what I liked, now I made a little small drawing of it, but Congorilla with the machine gun, that's what I really wanted to do. And, you know, so I got, it was like, okay, I get to do this, and enjoyed the hell out of it. And I forgot who we got. Oh yeah, it's Frank Giacoa. And I just loved the lines he did. And again, that's how I pictured myself. And again, when I got inkers like that, that helped me grow as an artist, knowing my limitations, what to do, what not to do. Like Frank would sit there and just slap ink. I mean, literally slapping ink. And I love that. It was a confidence I never had and still haven't learned to have with inks. But watching someone like him, watching someone like Joe Sinnott do it, that was another guy I wanted. I just, oh, beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Well, it's a fantastic piece. I mean, even this, like the little instruction almost you give of the ring representation, showing that he's using the ring, but then you get the enlarged version of the ring there. It tells you everything you need to know. And it's really, really a fantastic piece. I love the gorilla, the size, the comparison between the two. Yeah. It's super fun. Was this one that you had to get photocopied reference of, or did you remember?
As I was running my mouth, I was going on because I was hoping it would draw a memory of, I know this, Sikorsky did some Kung Gorillas. Again, had a lot of Sikorsky, so that was easy to find. But at least in my mind, have memories of. I forgot who originally did Congo Bill, and it was somebody, oh, God.
Well, it's Action Comics number one, so, I mean.
Yeah, but it was like somebody who became really, really famous later. It wasn't Leonard Starr, but it was somebody like that, who was a classic artist, and they were just doing their comics at the time. Or someone, I can't remember who. But I remember E. Nelson, or Nelson, would have this shit ready for you. And just a couple of panels, that's all I needed. I forgot the boys, Jomo, the Jungle Boy. That was another, all of that was from the 50s. So in my mind, a lot of what we see on the left of the screen is 50s. And what you saw on the right was the 60s.
Okay.
That time, you know, they were trying to, we all had a running joke. I mean, and it is true. It's not even a joke. It was a true edict. Julie Schwartz loved apes.
Oh, yeah.
So whether it was Titano or Grodd or Kongorilla, those were really the comics of the 60s. So we always had copies of those. But yeah, again, to answer your question, yeah, I asked for it.
Kind of getting the sense of that.
Yeah.
Well, I love this piece. I think it's fantastic. But I think we got to go on to another one of your characters. We're going to flip the page and talk about Gypsy, inked by Bob Smith.
That's when I first – that was the person – Bob is still with us, and he's on Facebook. And every year, I would beg – I would always tell him, Bob, I really, really wanted to work with you. Bob, to me, was like – and it's not a derogatory put, but it's just to give a degree. He was Dick Giordano light. But he was everything that I loved about Dick. He followed what you did, but he plussed it just right. And the only full comic I got to do with him was Outsiders. And I absolutely loved that work. And I wanted to work with him again, but he was always on something else. And I just couldn't get him. That was one of the first times I got to work with the one Gypsy, and it caught my eye because it wasn't like I didn't do I believe my best work, because I was feeling really I was starting to really just stop liking JLA Detroit. I knew I was going to leave, so I was doing this out of obligation because I'm the JLA Detroit guy, and I wanted to do Gypsy, but she didn't quite come together story wise for me. I learned something about me. If I didn't get the story, I couldn't just draw it. That was one of my character defects, I guess. I really had to get the story. I really had to feel a part of it. And even today, that's a strong thing for me. If I don't get your story, I'm not going to give you a good drawing, period. If you just want a generic superhero doing generic stuff, I don't like that. It's boring. And it's a struggle for me to draw it. You may like it. I know inside I have suffered. And with Gypsy, I remember drawing that and going, we never really got her. I wanted to get her. I wanted to get a Kitty Pryde feeling out of her, and I just couldn't get it. But Bob inked it, and it made it palatable. I was like, okay, you know? And I also said, hey, here's somebody, you're not crazy. Because my editor at the time made it sound like I was the problem. That, you know, you're not doing a great job. That's why you don't like your inkers. And, yeah. And then I see some other people who are going through the same thing I went and goes, well, we must all be messed up then. But I didn't have the noise. Again, the person I lost who would fight tooth and nail for me was Lynn. Because if I said I didn't like something, Lynn went out of his way to find out why and fixed it. The editor I had after that, I didn't have that.
Right.
And even with the Who's Who, that was starting to kind of bleed over. Well, again, Lynn was getting very busy with other stuff, but the edict was there. What the artist was looking for, we tried to put the best people together. So, yeah, I got Bob Smith here, and I really wish I could have got him elsewhere.
I mean, he's absolutely phenomenal. The inking on this is great. I love the surprint of her against the brick wall where she's clearly, even without color, you can tell she's transparent, And yet you can still see her. It's all expertly done. Bob did a great job with the shadows, the heavy lines in those areas.
He did.
And that beautiful profile shot of her at the bottom. I will say, you mentioned it wasn't your favorite. Like, I do notice a lot of white space in here. So I'm not sure if that's kind of what you meant earlier.
Well, this was one where I was given a particular, we had to do a vertical. And I had done up to that point a lot of horizontals. So, ocean, you know. So this was new. Again, people keep forgetting this was my second year as a comic artist. So a lot of this wasn't like, I wasn't a polished guy who can fall back on cliches. I was really, every piece was me learning something, pushing myself outside, or trying to stay comfortably inside. So this was a tough one because to me, she isn't that flashy. That was the point. We had a hard time trying to get what her powers were. And then once you do that, you got to find a way to make, okay, how do you make this into a dynamic shot? She's invisible. You know, in my mind, she was never invisible. She was a camouflage. She was
right
in camouflage, and then didn't have any offensive powers after that. You know, she didn't have martial arts. She didn't have flashy, you know, zap powers or mental powers. So that went into the drawing where it was really hard to find who she was. The relationships was something that, again, Jerry and I, when we initially talked about it, her and Steele was going to get together or somebody. Yeah, her and Steele. And again, I saw a Colossus Kitty feeling. You're going to notice I had a lot of combinations. Again, I was borrowing a lot from X-Men because that was the thing. And Titans. And so I knew we needed relationships. So I didn't know how to translate that. We haven't got that far in the story, so I couldn't put Steele in here. Because we haven't got there yet. And I couldn't telegraph it, and I couldn't figure out how to make it work in that format. So I just thought, okay, she's camouflage, machine guns threatening her. Let's move on. So that was pretty much it. That's why I feel like I kind of failed on that, even though Bob did a beautiful job.
I love the entry. You may not be happy
with it.
It's a great
piece. Yeah, it's a great piece.
I got to be harder on myself because I'm also going back 40 years. I'm a lot kinder now. I mean, I actually feel more like, at least I got it done. Then it was like, I really felt like, well, God, Paris is doing these great bombastic shots. And here I am with this, hey, look, I'm invisible. And I just did not, I didn't like me then. So. Thank you.
Well, from one Bob Smith piece to another, Rob, you want to take us?
Yeah, next up is a half-page Jinx, who first appeared in New Teen Titans. Now, I have to say, I figure this is you emulating George Perez a little bit. I don't mean stylistically, more that you created for yourself one of the most pain-in-the-ass costumes to draw.
Yes, I do.
In that, it's like, why would you do this to yourself, Chuck?
Well, because, okay, this is, again, time-wise, it's so weird. I can remember getting it. But I can't remember how it was progressive. Other than, again, I was starting Titans. This was my first Titans.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Marv gave me the mission of designing her. Basically saying, I want a Middle Eastern. I want her either Middle Eastern or South Asian. And she's got to reflect that. She's got to be spooky. And that was it. That was my description of her. And I had these wonderful kabuki puppet things, photo book, and there is someone kind of like that, and I wanted to take that plus the mummy. I wanted this again, play this very East. I think she was more Indian than anything else, so I wanted to play that kind of exoticness in there. And George, believe it or not, was a great primer for that kind of stuff. And since I thought I was I was doing three issues of Titans. And in my mind, that was my tryout for it. I wanted to maintain his style. So I was emulating him. I was back to that, you know, well, you know, if I was drawing wannabes, it'd be more like, Sikowski. I'm drawing Titans. I got to make it more like George. And as hard as this was, it was actually, again, I learned a lot. I learned what works for George doesn't work for other people. And someone didn't work for me. I think, again, if I had to redesign her, I know a lot I'd leave off. I didn't know a lot about how to deal with silhouettes at the time. This was the drawing process. Plus, we had to tell a story. Oh, now was the other thing. She's, as much as this, I love this character, this was one of the first half-page ones I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I think I did Mal before.
Well, that's coming up next.
Yeah, I think I did Mal. Mal was a half-page.
Mm-hmm.
But, so that's why she's kind of squeezed in, and that scene was kind of alluded to in the JLA and the Titans I did of her, that she's this malicious, murderous woman who's kind of exotic and baubles and beards. And yeah, I mean, I went nuts, but I was, this was weird where I'm telling you, as much as it was hard, I had fun drawing her.
Well, it's a beautiful piece. And honestly, if I didn't know that you were the one who designed it, I would totally believe this was a Perez-designed Titans character.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but I mean, it's in my mind, it is.
It is. I mean, to me, I'm going to take it as a compliment, but because I mean, I every once in a while I got to talk to George, and I knew his wife was a dancer, and every once in a while he would show me pictures of her, and the costumes was just like something he would draw. In fact, I think he designed them for her. So I had a sense of how George would approach it. Now, did I make it like him? I'm not going to be naive. I'm not George Perez. I'm not going to pull it off as well as he would. But I try to. That's the thing. I'm coming onto this book, and I knew I was in competition of taking it over. And I thought, and I wasn't wrong, it's what you assume. Well, we want to keep that momentum, what George brought to it. So I tried to bring that to that. And the choice, it's funny, the person they eventually picked was as far away from George as George is. But a hell of an artist, but, you know, in the long run, Ed Barreto took over the book, and that's not George. So, but at the time, that's what I was trying to channel. And had fun. Again, that's the weird part. As much as it may have been a disappointment not getting it, I had fun going there.
All right.
I got a trilogy out of it, so that's pretty good.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, from one Titan to the next, next up is Mal, another half-page entry. This time Mal's inked by Romeo Tengal.
Yeah, Mal's fun. But Mal's funny. This was talking about Machiavelli and Lin. Lin goes, you got to draw Mal because you're the only black artist.
Okay.
I think Marv threw that at me one time, and I'm like, you know what? So, and I'm taking it seriously, and they're joking, but later I realized, you know what that is? That's kind of a compliment. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of, I knew I wasn't going to get Black Lightning. I like Black Lightning, but I wasn't going to get it. Trevor Von Eden, that's his book. And Mal was not, and I remember Mal from the old days of early Titans. I was a huge Titans fan in the 60s as a kid. He was kind of depressing because I didn't like the whole, hey, I'm blowing a horn shit. But I liked it. You know, that's when they were joking. Again, that was the thing that I really was grateful that we can sit around the office and joke around like that. That I can come in and Lynn goes, you're going to love me. I'm going to give you the one black character that nobody wants to draw. And guess what? You're black, so you're going to do a great job. And, you know, nowadays people go, oh, my God, it's so terrible. It wasn't. It was a respectful, very open, I felt like one of the boys. I felt like one of the crew. And whenever I would tighten up, there was Lynn going, kid, you're in this. Don't worry. But, yeah, can you draw this guy? And I took it as a challenge. And not, you know, again, I only had a half a fucking page, so I couldn't really elaborate. And it's Mal. What the hell can we do? I wanted to do more of the Guardian thing. But again, I over-intellectualized and thought more of Mal than less of the Guardian. And if I had to do it over again, I would definitely have made the Guardian a little stronger, a lot stronger behind. But everybody... But, you know, again, we were talking about Mal blow your damn horn. And also at this time, Marv was starting to bring him into the regular Titans. And he specifically said, I want to show an older Mal who has a little too good a living because he now owns a jazz club and he's a renowned jazz player. And he's put on some weight, which I thought... that's not really heroic. On the other hand, it was real. So that face there with a little more weight is Mal, middle-aged Mal looking at, because that's weird with the superheroes. He's middle-aged, but you can't call him middle-aged, but we have to show him older. So again, I took this as a real growing lesson of how to portray this without betraying it, you know?
So, well, I think the gray jumpsuit version, the main figure looks great. I love the face on him. I love the face. Because you're right. He doesn't look like the teenager anymore. He looks like he's got some years on him.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that was the thing. Because I think after that, the only time when he shows up like that is during Donna Troy's marriage.
Mm.
And so you see him and I forgot Bumblebee's name. I got the sneaker in there. as a young artist, I'm not crazy about my... I mean, I look at what Ernie Colon's done down there, and that's a beautiful layout. I didn't know how to do that well then. And unfortunately, you know, I mean, Ernie was one of my editors, and Ernie was more of a drill sergeant than he was a teacher for me. And so I wasn't going to get that information on how to approach that. But, you know, we learn. We learn.
You know, I'm speaking only for myself. I find putting on weight to be very heroic. I've been doing a lot of that, and I feel very heroic about it, Chuck. So,
I'm proud of that. I mean, when I look at it now, that to me gets my attention more than the Hornblower.
Right.
I mean, right. In some ways, in my mind, I succeeded by showing this guy has grown. He went from this firebrand kind of militant superhero to this now a elder statesman kind of thing, and settled, and he knows himself. And I try to get that look. Expressions were really important to me, especially when I got, that's what led me again in animation, is to try to get not just a corny stoic look, but I wanted to get this feeling of he's looking back at his past with a little pride. And I don't know if I pulled it off well. I mean, Romeo is another one where I love him personally, and very problematic back and forth on inking with him, working with him. Because Romeo had a way of changing your expression so you didn't get it.
Oh.
And I wasn't the only one who complained about that. George was the first to complain. So every once in a while, I get something that worked, and sometimes I didn't. This one kind of worked. But I have others where it didn't.
We disagree, but we can go on from that. So okay, let's move on to Mon-El, which came in one of the updates. This came really late. How did you end up? Because you never did any Legion of Superhero pages, right? So how'd you end up doing this?
I did, but not enough to I didn't do anything with Mon-El. This okay. Now at this point, I think we are in the next year, and it was who was available.
Okay. Yeah, we're into 1987 at this point for sure.
Yeah.
Who's available? And do you want to be busy? Do you want to do this? And so it wasn't about you choosing. It was available. And would you do it or not? And I got this. And it's funny. I always loved Manu. I always wanted to do the Legion. And the Legion shots that I've gotten were so small and in between. I mean, I did an Invisible Kid story. The French Invisible Kid, you know, not the other Invisible Kid, but he's black. He has that red and jumpy. Well, he's a black guy. Let Chuck draw him. So it's like,
wow. You know,
I know. We shake our heads now. I can laugh at it now. At the time, I was grateful to do it. But I was also disappointed that when nobody asked me to do Karate Kid, you know. But anyway, so I got my nail. That was like a mea culpa. That was like, okay. Hey, and honestly, this was, to me, one of my favorite Who's Who entries. Because I didn't know I was going to get Robert Campanella. I've seen his work before. I put a lot of pencil mileage. By this time, I had seen a lot of things that I liked and needed to learn and was trying to avoid the things I was doing before. And I wanted this to feel like a real piece. And so if you notice, there's a lot more in the backgrounds because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted a pose on him because I knew that I knew Giffen was going to draw one. I'm not Giffen. I wanted to draw, again, I was paying homage to the guys I grew up one I was looking at. And so I was really proud of the pretzels here. And then, like any proud papa, I was so frightened of who they're going to give it to Inc. And because I didn't have a choice. It was that thing again. Whoever came in the door is going to get the job. And Robert Campanella got it. And I was so pleased with what he did. And so today, even today, this was one of my favorite. And I forgot who did. Oh, you know who was drawing it then was Steve Lytle.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, and Steve was damn good. And I looked at what he did, but, you know, it was like, well, I'm not going to draw it exactly like he did it because he already did an entry of Manu. And I forgot why they asked me. Because, again, by this point, Who's Who is a running, is up and running. It's like a train. We just got to get bodies on here. So it was like, so when I got the assignment, you know, I was like, all right, I'm going to do it the way I like to see it, but I also want to, and I'm hearing, and I forgot who was giving me, I can't remember if it was Bob Greenberg who was giving me the info or Barbara of what they needed to see. And it was basically, you know, we want to sum up his history up to this point. So that's why I got Shadow Lass in there and him and Ultra Boy. And again, long story short, my favorite pencil entry.
Wow.
This one.
Well, Campanella really brought out some interesting stuff in the line work in some of the.
Yeah.
I lack the artistic intelligence to verbalize some of this, but for me, what I'm seeing is sharper angles is what I'm seeing a lot of. Yeah. Less rounded. It looks really cool. And man, that surprint, that deep purple surprint with the Starfield just rocks. It's so impressive.
What got me was that, again, expressions turned me on. If you follow my expressions, I'm happy. He got Monel's face, and he got the pose. And you're right about those angles. I wanted that. I wouldn't have got that, not to pick on him, because he's gone, but I wouldn't have got that from Mike Macklin. I wouldn't have got that from a couple other people. But with, I mean, even the zipper tone he put in impressed me. And I wouldn't have asked for it, but I was learning. That's, again, I wanted an inker who would show me the possibility and also understand my form. And he did. And we never got to do another thing again. Because I remember going back and going, hey, can we get Robert Campanella inker? No, he's on to something else now. Hey, the train's left the station again. Oh, boy, who's the mystery inker this time? So it was back on that. But this one, again, I'm very proud.
All right. Well, let's go from Mon-El to... you and Larry Malstead drawing quite possibly the most ripped man in the DC universe.
I was dying for us to get to this one.
Multi-man.
You know what I'm going to say, right? You know what I'm going to say.
I don't know what you're going to say, man, because I got all kinds of things going through my brain. You really?
Yeah. I love this son of a bitch. I love the challengers. By this time, I was getting talks about reviving the challengers. Doing this little, Secret Origins. And I had picked up Challengers. And Lynn, I think, was involved again. Again, the most fun I've always had was with Lynn. I mean, he heard me. He knew what I was about. And he knew I loved when I said I want to do something. He'd rather you come say, I want to do it because I love it, as opposed to, I want to do it because I want to make money. You know, sure, I want to make money. But I know if you put yourself into it, you're going to do a better job. So here's the challengers coming. I love the challengers. I love the Bob Brown challengers. You know, I mean, I grew up, I was very young when Kirby and Wally Wood did it, and I loved it. But the guys I knew who I repeatedly bought were the Bob Brown challengers. And the guy they always had this running fight with, to me, their version of Dr. Doom was Multi-Man.
That's generous, Chuck. That is generous.
I like the odd guys. The other one was, who's the one with the weirder name? Oh, Animal Minimal Vegetable Guy.
Oh, yeah.
It was either man or him. And I'm a sucker for big head guys. I am. I'm a sucker for big head guys. I wanted to do Hector Hammond so bad. I wanted to draw that guy so bad. I just love Hector. But I got Multi-Man, which is, to me, Multi-Man, the funny part is that I gave him more muscle and stature than he was, because he could change a little bit. But his regular stature was big head, little skinny body. And I didn't want to do that part. I wanted to just get to the end. So we got that. And then getting Larry Malstead, that was another one where I had no choice. Not bad, just not the person I would picture with me. Not bad. I was unfortunate. I mean, I saw him doing Giffen, and so I was worried, am I going to get Giffenized here? And I wasn't, but I think the same as getting Bob Smith, put it that way. I would have been happy with Bob Smith.
The profile shot of the face came out really nice in the background together. I mean, that was a nice combination.
Actually, I like the little bodies on the bottom.
Okay.
Because, again, I was – because at this time, and again, why I was associated with this, because the word was told, if we pulled this Secret Origins of the Challengers off, I could get to revise the Challengers. By that time, I'm off JLA, so I really wanted another series, and I wanted something I related to, and I love the Challengers. So it was like, cool, I want to redo the Challengers. So they even let me get as far as changing their costume. I even did a growl of all five of them. I gave them a new action kind of costume. A little more paramilitary and less superhero, because Bob Brown drew them in that yellow and red, which I liked, but it just was too trying to make them superheroes. I wanted to get them back to the dungaree that Kirby had, and but I also wanted to make it slick. And so in the meanwhile, for that 5 minutes, I was the Challenger guy. And so I got the drum multi-man. And that's why I got him. And then I got to do him in that chicken form, which was kind of fun. Oh, yeah. So
you were,
this is what I asked for. Yeah.
You weren't kidding about the stature. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Every time we've ever come across this entry, the muscles get talked about.
My man is ripped, man. He is.
His name is Multi-Man. You know, he gets to play around with it.
Hello, ladies.
I wanted a scene where he's boxing Rocky and saying, I didn't think he can get, you know, didn't think I could get as buff as you, huh? You know, something like that. That was
right.
Amazing.
I had fun with the stupid pose, the grin. This was a fun entry.
It's definitely fun. Fun is a great word for it. Yes, absolutely.
I can remember being like a 15-year-old getting to that going, what? Who the hell is it? What? Like, because I had no idea who this guy was. I was like, what the hell is this thing? So
I remember talking to Lynn going, I don't want to do him the way, because he, that was always how he get beat. He'll revert back to his little pencil neck version. And literally, I think they would hold him up, you know, and let his feet dangle. And I want that to be, I want him to feel like a threat here. So, you know, because he could change his size. That was the whole point.
Right.
So I want to do, okay, show a little skinny guy and then have to figure out. I want you to see it and go, who is this dude? Right reaction.
Mission accomplished, Chuck. All right. So let's move on to Phobia from the Fearsome Five. Look, the thing about this one is, I love that you took the effort, you made the effort to overlap the surprint with the main image, right? That's just, Shag and I both, when we got to that, we're like, man, that must have taken a forever to just, I mean, part of it, that's the DC production office. They got to line that up, but you had to make the extra effort to do it. It's just such a great combo and playing with the format a little bit.
This is why this is like the third favorite one by, because, and also very heavily inspired by George. I mean, I saw how she was. She was one of those, in my mind, George Crater, you know, she was a Titans villain. But I got the same vibe off her as I did with my cadre, where you got these fun-looking people, and you don't see a lot done with them. And I wanted to, everything I've seen of his, I mean, he handled the same way. I don't know, because Marv gave him too much story, and she only got to do one blast, and then she gets knocked out or smacked around by Raven. But I wanted to really play up that gothic look of her. And I know I loved how George would sneak in these creatures and stuff. And again, stretching, and felt like I won't have a chance to do this anywhere else. I want to show I can do this. I want to show I could do or handle a horror story if I needed to, or horror superhero thing. So Phobia, not something I was normally, I didn't do any story with her, but I was trying out for Titans. So I got that because George was, I think at this point, he was Mr. Crisis. So there's nothing he's going to touch. until he had a little time and he grabbed other things. He definitely wanted to do Titans himself. But the other Masters of Evil, whatever the hell they were called, a Brotherhood of Evil, was up for grabs. So I had fun with this. And then Kiesel, I've seen his work. And again, I wish I could say I picked him. He was picked for me, and it came out really well. I liked what I saw.
Carl Kiesel's one of the greatest inkers of the era, for sure. Now, I want to point out another thing. Since we're mentioning the surprint, I just want to get this in there, too. You did not only this amazing surprint where the snake's wrapping around the foreground, but you actually got to use two surprints, two different surprints on this entry. You got the magenta and the blue. And yeah. I'm sure there's another one out there, but I can't think of another Who's Who entry that had two surprints. So did you have to fight for that? Was it you just did it and turned it in?
Well, it wasn't up to me. It was up to who was editing. I think it was Bob. And they all knew, this is what sells it. This is our format. So every once in a while you get, and also the ink, the colorist, if service right, I don't have it in front of me, but I would bet it was Adrian O'Rourke, who was, to me, one of the best colorists in the business. Not just one of the best to work with, one of the best in the business. And she was really good at, hey, we can't do that. Oh, yeah. And she'll figure out a way to do it. And I think this is a perfect example of, well, we can't do two or three colors. And she did it. That's how good she was. And so it was always, I mean, again, I have my list of people I didn't want to work with. Or I was afraid who I got. And then when I knew it was her, I could relax.
Great piece. It's a great piece.
I like Mon-El, when this came out, I was so pleased. I hate saying pleased. It sounds so, you know, so super sneakity. I'm so pleased. I was just fucking happy. I was my fanboy was like, oh man, I'm finally seeing me the way I want to be seen. And thus also hoping editors would see this and go, hey, look, he really can draw. You know, he's not just this, you know, fly by night pencil or whatever. And he works well with people. Give him the right people, he does work well. I don't know if that conversation ever happened, but for 5 minutes, I felt like I got it across with this.
It's a phenomenal piece, and it just really jumps out as being one of the banner ones here, without a doubt.
It's so weird to say this is one of my favorite ones, and nobody even knows who she is.
We do, Chuck. We do.
We do. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Thank you.
But there's a lot of DC fans who knows who she is.
that's the beauty of Who's Who. That was really the essence of Who's Who, is, you know, take a character and really give them their due, you know.
Well, let's keep the Titans love rolling here. We move on to the next entry, which is Simon, which is drawn by you and Larry Malstead. And you got a chance to show off one of DC's greatest assets, which is Dick Grayson's butt here.
I am always amazed how much people talk about his butt. I mean, I have a friend who was a manager, a lady friend who was a manager of a comic shop. And she, every once in a while, we just go goofy. Just her and I in the shop. And she talk about things I would like to do, like a Dick Grayson butt weekend. anyway. But that's not the star of this. It's Simon, really.
That's true.
Because Simon was one of the few, I mean, Marv was so proud of this. Simon was, I think, the first open gay character who happens to be evil, but he's gay. And the funny part was most people didn't care and didn't know. Marv would just love to tell you. And I was sitting there, well, good thing, you know, that doesn't get in the way of his moral, you know, capacity, you know, because he's evil as shit, you know. He's a manipulator. And another one where I got to, because I knew that, but Marv knew how he felt. I love how Simon obviously has this thing about Nightwing, always trying to, you know, mind blow him, you know, throw him to a wall or something. Maybe because he wants those buns, we don't know. But I got to play that up here. And again, when I was doing my run of Titans, that was a big scene where he throws Dick 50 feet in the air and Starfire has to grab him. So I just basically took the scene. But I got to do the backstory of him. He's this little, you know, pencil neck geek, gets zapped, gets his incredible powers. Again, if Big Head guys are kind of fun. I love glass head, big head guys. And the big glass head in the brain is just so disturbing. So 50s sci-fi. And another part that I think is great, his little ponytail. You know, he's got his robe. I mean, dude is he's the Liberace of the comic book world. Come on. He's in a robe. He's got a ponytail. You know, if he's not flamboyant, I don't know what. And all he's lacking is an earring. But I'm glad we stopped. I'm glad George didn't go that far. But I had fun with this. This was another one where I got to work out angles. I think I did this the same time I did Phobia. I know I did, because if you notice that even with the lettering, I had it in my head to give them a symbol, because they're in the same group. So I wanted to, well, not same group, but they fight Titans. Yeah. So the way I laid it out with the powers going into the lettering and stuff, and I think I did a little bit of that with Phobia, that was fun.
I would think Simon's sexuality wouldn't play into it at all, because he's got an exposed brain in a jar, right? he's not getting any action, no matter who it is. It doesn't matter. You know?
Well, I have these running jokes with Paris, like going, "We, you know, it's worse because he knows what's on your mind. So even if he's turned on, you know you're going to be turned off by him. That's going to piss him off even further."
Yeah.
You hate me. Ooh.
I mean, you know, you could find the hottest woman in the world, and if her brain is exposed, I'm not going to find her pretty. So it doesn't matter. So, Simon, I would think worry about something else before you really try and pursue relationships or anything.
The fun with doing these guys was that these were the quintessential hair. One, they were designed by George. And then me getting to draw them, I really got to, I learned by looking at what George did, how I approach it, and then approach it my way. So again, I wished I had that. I mean, I got Titans because Marv felt like I didn't get a chance to do what I would like to do. He felt like I wasn't being used well. And I didn't get to have fun. And so when I got the Titans, even though it's the weirdest Titans of them all, I really did get to have fun with these guys. And I wish I could have done Cadre with as much fun as I had with this. So, you know, I'm really grateful. This is one of my favorites. But yeah, I remember doing Phobia, and I think I did Simon first before the Phobia. And so that's why Phobia, I think, comes together a little better.
Okay.
Well, I think we're seeing a lot of interesting stuff going on there. We're seeing lots of different sizes, different perspectives. You got an amazing Kirby crackle, that a very maniacal profile. I don't sell this one short. I think this is a lot of fun, and I think it tells a story.
I'm not giving my other collaborator as much. I mean, I never worked with, again, never got to work with Larry, and he did a beautiful job, and I wish I got to work with him more. Again, it broke my – the part that I'm grateful about Who's Who is that I got to work with more people – different people that I would have never gotten a chance to. And unfortunately, I couldn't parlay that to an editor and say, hey, let's put Larry Marsden on JLA. Let's
yeah.
Vigilante, at least on Vigilante, I got Rick Magyar, and I'm really grateful about that.
Mm-hmm.
But
All right. So let's keep going. Next up, this is from update 87, number 5. This is the Royal Flesh Gang, the classic JLA villains. Now, I would not have guessed this had you not said it, but knowing you were such a fan of Sikowski, I'm assuming you wanted this because it was a Sikowski thing, because they were created under his run on the book.
Get out of my head. Yes. Yes, exactly. I mean, it's funny because everybody drew him a certain way. George drew him a different way. Because I was off JLA at this time, but I was still associated with it. I think I was
going to come.
I'm coming to the end of my comic book moments, because this is 87. I moved to California. It was getting harder and harder for me to keep getting a consistent book. And so nobody was drawing this. So it fell back on me. I think it was also this fear that I didn't want to do anything JLA. And so it was this weird communication. I know if I was dealing with Lynn, it would have been a lot easier, but I wasn't. Again, Lynn and I, the synergy to talk with him, been so much easier, but it wasn't. But the funny part was when I got this, and I think they showed me George's version, and I immediately went to Sikowski. That's what I love. I love the variety. I always thought the Ace was always going to be the biggest guy. Sikowski drew him that way. To me, I was looking at it going, I want them, you look at him and there's a story in it. You know why King is this way. You know why Ten is this way. Ten was a guy before, I think. But I like George made him a woman. So again, this one shot I had, and I just got the channel. This was the guys. If I was allowed to draw them in GLA, this is why.
It's a great piece. I love it.
It's a great piece. And this is probably in the 87 because I think Kevin Maguire would have just done him in Justice League about the same time. And I know I'm supposed to say 10 is the hot one, but I'm sorry. I think your queen here, woof, like it's getting warmer in this room. just saying.
I like a woman who knows how to make stockings work. So yeah, and you know, and the funny part is, as much as I'm going on about how much I like them, it did dawn on me how damn difficult those costumes are.
It's complicated stuff, man. It's like Jack of Hearts over at Marvel. Like, who the hell wants to draw?
I have a running. My old friend, me, rest in peace, was Art Nichols, and we used to have these long marathon talks about certain guys we drew and regret drawing. And we both made a challenge to each other to try to draw. He was becoming my inker. We were supposed to work together at DC. We never got to. And then here we are later in our lives. We decided, okay, we're going to pal up. And he goes, well, then we have to do Jack of Hearts. Just so we can say we did Jack of Hearts. Wow. it was funny. It was just a running intimidation. Like, you sure you're going to get all the damn lines right? Yeah, get the perspective right, you know. You put your little inner Herb Trippy. I forgot who first drew him. It wasn't Herb Trippy. It was, I know George Foreman, the French, I think he's Canadian.
Somebody who wanted to punish every subsequent artist after him, I think.
Pretty good. But there were certain guys who got it right. George Freeman did a great job. But there was the person who created it originally. And maybe it was Giffen. All I know is that, yeah, he's a... That was just a messed up costume. So I'm doing these guys that dawn on me, you know, that's not that far from what's his name. But yeah, I'm pretty happy. I like this one. This was good.
That's a great piece. I love seeing you draw villains from the classic JLA era, right? Because I didn't get to see that much, right? So I thought that was awesome.
I wanted that so bad. I mean, again, when we got JLA Detroit, I thought the problem was with Jerry was when he's done it so much, so he kind of went on automatic. And I wanted to explore these guys in a way that he kind of did and then kind of forgot. I wanted the backstory of our JLA guys with these guys. Continuity. History, you know? And so having the Royal Gang show up, but I forgot when he was working with George, he did a lot of the stories that I kind of wanted to do. Mm. So I can't blame him. He really, really kind of burned his way out. He burned, a lot of that out. Like I even joke with him, I want to do a Shaggy Man story because it was a
Yeah,
I would have been great, right? See, just tackle all the classic JLA villains. Shag's favorite famous Felix Faust.
I mean, what bothered me is when I got off JLA, what does he bring back? He brings in Amazo and Despero. Pisses me off because it's like those guys.
Well, back to this, though. A couple things I want to call them. Again, the faces on the side look great, the little inset faces. We should mention, by the way, your inker was Roy Richardson on this one.
That's what I thought it was.
The faces are just killing it. They look fantastic. The minimalist lines on the girls looks great. And the clever use of the surprint being the playing card they're all standing on. Like, I didn't even notice that at first. And it took me a minute to realize, there's the surprint. Really, really clever.
That was a tricky one because it's like, well, if I wasn't so lazy. And again, by this point, I was getting these things and only had very short turnarounds. So if I wanted to do a scene of them flying, because that was the other thing, I love that they had flying cards. You know, they all had that, platform. And so I cheated and put them all on one, but I could have done a shot of them flying through the city with, robbing a bank or something. But I didn't have a lot of time. And I was fighting burnout of knowing that I was disappointed and was getting out of comics.
Yeah. But,
so it's funny looking at this and knowing where my head is now, and I can laugh at it. It bothered me that I knew this was happening, and then I get something like this where, God, I really wish I could have drawn those guys. If they say, hey, Chuck, we got a World Flesh Gang story, it would have pulled me from the brink. Off of that. So, anyway.
Well, let's move on to our next one. We've got Shimmer, and inked by Bob Smith, so another Titans character, with a pretty wild costume. Why don't you tell us about this one a little bit?
But she's, again, this is another one because I got to do this around the same time I did Phobia and Simon. You know, that scene is kind of, it's not in the Titans that I drew, but I love these guys. I always did. I love their combination. Shimmer. Shimmer's a white girl with a fro. So.
Yes, very much so.
I'm playing that up. You know, and I always wanted the backstory, and Marv would sometimes he would tell me, and sometimes it was basically his version of just draw it. But no, Marv, tell me what's on her mind. What does she like to eat? You know, when she does this. Now, when Lynn would do it easily, you can sit down and hey, Lynn, what does she eat? She's sauerkraut and this, and it makes her sour, and da 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 da. And Lynn would just go off. Marv, I'll get back to you later, which means he's going to make it up. But I enjoyed working with that. I love working with him. And when he gave me this one to do, again, I'm drawing him in that three-parter. And so I got to do a little bit more than I wasn't able to do on the story. So that was fun. And then again, getting to work with somebody who I've seen Roy's work on other people. No idea how he... that's where I'm getting the story. It's Bob again. Bob.
Yep, this one's Bob. Yeah.
I feel like this is... Now, I could be wrong, and Bob would go, you're out of your fucking mind. I felt like Bob was rushed on this one. Compared to the other ones he's done. Still beautiful, but I was at a point where, again, I was obsessed with him. I was joking, saying, you must have thought I was stalking you because you just did things. I love that you followed the faces. The face was exactly the way I drew it. You got it. And, but I also know that DC wasn't giving us a whole lot of time either. But still, I would have took a rush Bob Smith job over anyone else I can mention.
But, well, you're right about him maintaining your line. I mean, if you look at the face in the background, the profile shot, that is definitely a Chuck Patton face. I can tell that a mile away. And also, you mentioned white girl the fro, but if someone told me that was Nichelle Nichols in the background, I might believe them.
You see, in my mind, again, learning from George, because that was a fun part of working on George characters. You got into George psychology. George was the first I knew, and John Byrne, who would have a live action person in mind when they drew somebody. I think he had Michelle Pfeiffer in mind for Shimmer. George is no longer with us, but I remember seeing her and seeing that. And at the time, I think, Scarface out? I can't remember. But whenever I saw Pfeiffer, she had this sort of almost cat-like face about her. And, hot, you know, I like that. And the hair was just a nice, without saying disco was disco, without, you know, and she was disco, Shimmer, come on. She was great. And her brother, this big mammoth son of a bitch, you know, that was just fun. Again, I liked it. And again, what shows for me that I liked Bob, how he treated Cyborg, because I really put work into his face and he pulled it off. That's how you make, you know, that was the kind of thing that would always make me happy, that they followed what I was trying to do and made me see myself. Because there were times when I thought, I don't know if I did it right. And if it was inked right, it made me, then I realized, okay, you know, we got something. I still tease Bob. I would love to work with him. He's happy just doing, Archie. <It's a lot. laughs> You know, I think he's doing something really simple. But I would have loved to have worked with him. I think I would have stayed on the book longer. Anyway, yeah, so that's Shimmer.
All right. So, all right, next up, explain yourself, Chuck Patton. Star Hunters?
This? Okay. I know. This is a weird one where it was offered to me, and I would have took it no matter what. I like this book. I didn't even get a chance to tell David Michelin how much I like this book. Because by this point, you know, I've done the superheroes and I'm sick of it. And I wanted to branch out. I wanted to do other things. It's funny. It was like a 2 years prior to that, I had this conversation with Dick about, can we get the variety of comics back the way it was? Can we get back to Westerns? Can we get back to horror? Can we get back to mysteries? Can we get back to this? Even romance books. And Dick honestly said, it won't happen. And all of a sudden, Vertigo comes and changed everything. And everybody, my roommate, Sean McManus, was allowed to do a Vertigo book, and I wasn't. You know, he was my roommate back in the day.
Oh, my gosh. What a powerhouse of creativity that one was.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It was pretty crazy. His entire life, the man fulfilled his entire life of drawing Swamp Thing. That's all he ever wanted. Didn't care about anything else. And he got to draw Swamp Thing, and it was one of Alan Moore's best scripts, too.
Hmm.
But that's him. You're asking me. Enough about Sean. But, good man. Very good man. But this one was one where it was like, oh, dude, I want to do a space story. But there's not a lot of space stuff at DC. I wasn't going to get Adam Strange. I love all that shit. I drove with Sikowski. When I met Sikowski later, I drove him nuts about Manhunter 2070. I got a sketch now of Manhunter 2070 that I haven't finished yet. I think I showed a little bit of it, but I'm going to get around to it.
Another sentence that's never been uttered before.
Get it from me, man. Yeah, this is what I loved. If DC really wanted to be nice to me, they would have just gave me this shit and let me go, you know? But so this came up. This was one of those where, like, well, you know, Don Newton was gone and he had started the book. And I forgot who did it. Rich Buckler was still alive, but I think you got to a place again with the original edict was to get the artists who were associated with it. You couldn't get them for whatever reason, whether it's the dead or they were person non grata. There was something like that who they didn't want back in the building. And so they would come to guys like me to, you know, hey, could you touch it up? And I was more than happy to because I liked this series. And I got Bob again. So it's like, you know,
it's a great piece. I mean, it's a bit, look, by the way, I started this with a little bit of a joke. I'm not trying to knock the Star Hunters. David Michelin is a great. I just remember being a kid, right? Cause to me, you were Justice League guy. You were like a superstar. And then I'm reading Who's Who and I'm like, Chuck Patton is doing Star Hunters. What the hell is this? It was just the incongruity of it was just like,
I would have paid them money if they gave me this as a series. I would have been happy. I didn't care. I wanted that. I wanted them to give me even Stalker, something like that, and let me play. I mean, Jenny Jurgens was doing Warlord, you know, and I was like, I didn't want Warlord, but if I would have loved it if I was asked to do it. But no one did. And this was as close to someone asking me to do something like that. And so I went out, and I was really happy. This was like the fourth favorite piece that I did. And, you know, I know that no one knows who they are, and they've gone into, you know, I like doing the little heads on the sides. I had fun.
Yes.
It's a fantastic piece. I love the purple and the serpent. I mean, I know that that's the colorist, but just the contrast with what you've drawn. I love the white background of the ground. Like, it's such a great use of darks and lights. So again, it's the kind of thing where if you didn't know the Star Hunters, right, you'd be like, man, these guys are like badasses because this listing's awesome.
That's me. I'd never heard of them. And I see this entry. I'm like, dang, I want to read this comic now.
Yeah.
You're very fun. I thought it was a very fun comic. It walked a fine line between, because we're in Star Wars times.
Mm-hmm. And
what I liked about this was that it didn't go the Star Wars way. It's closer to Star Trek. It's close to the Star Trek with splashes of old school. God, I can rattle off all the DC heroes: Space Ranger, Adam Strange, Captain Comet. They all had that, but on a sort of very definite 80s spin, dystopic, apocalyptic, and again, what's refreshing, did not fall into the Star Wars. Ooh, we're zooming through space at 9 miles. You know, 90 billion miles an hour and buzzing like we're World War II planes. It really had that old school, you know, light ship, spar ship. I mean, DC, again, the legacy of DC because of Julie Schwartz. Science fiction, I thought, was treated a lot more straight than, let's say, Marvel. Unless you're Jack Kirby and Stan right. on Fantastic Four. But anything else felt like something else you've seen somewhere. And Star Hunters was fun. Even with the name Star Hunters, it didn't fall. Again, it was more Star Trek than that. And I liked that. I wanted that. I liked the swashbuckleriness of it. You know, the headband on a guy. Come on. Yeah. So, and if you pull it off right, that's why when Bob inked, I went to a lot of work to get the side faces right. And when I saw Bob's inks on it, it just really, like, wow, you know, he hit it. He got me.
Wait, you,
I was happy.
You crushed it with the angles and the poses and everything. You made it very dynamic. Something that might not have ended up that way. Very dynamic. And again, someone like me, never heard of it, thinks it looks awesome.
So. I think the one, two guys that crack me up and they work is the cringing coward behind the girl, the Asian girl with the gun.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what his job was, but he was basically the Dr. Smith of the ship. He was
just, okay.
He was a backstabbing sniveler and just happened to be on board. And then just so that you know, if anybody gets shot, here's Doc. And he's floating in with his bag, which I had to put a red cross on. So we didn't think that, oh, did he rip off some money? Oh, he's got a red bag. But I had fun with that. And it came together. And it really, I like when I can see something or draw something. And in their pose and in that shot, you get a little bit of storytelling. And that's what I liked about it.
And you get Mindy Yana looks great. So,
yeah.
But we got to move on, though, to a really critical one. Here we're going to talk about Steel by you and Larry Malmsteed. I mean, this is one of the characters you helped develop for Justice League Detroit. There's also some guy in the background named Dale Gunn, who I think there's some artistic history there with, right? Yeah,
the self-portrait.
Ah, you've been wanting to say that all night. I know.
Yes, I have.
Everybody has. You know what? I'm going to embrace it. There was a time where I go, oh, no. Oh, screw that. Yeah, it was me.
you were Dale Gunn macking with Zatanna.
Yeah,
and
you inserted yourself into a book where Zatanna is all over you, Chuck. I mean, come on, man. Own it.
We all are so proud of you.
Yeah.
We are in this business, unless you are certain people. We're all these horny little lonely guys out of the basement. Let's be honest here. And so only on the pages do we get to shine and become something we're not. I know I'm exposing myself more than I should, but then I'm going to be 70. What the hell do I care? I don't give a fuck. I don't care. So things have changed. There's nothing like that. I can laugh at myself now. The reason I did this piece was, again, I never liked this character. I know I'm getting real here. But I never really liked Steel. I never thought it came together for me. It was definitely more Jerry's guy. But this was one where I was determined to make it work, even though I didn't like him. And the only thing I liked about him was my interpretation, Dale Gunn. That's what I made. I wanted him in there to keep him from being a ripoff of Captain America or a ripoff of Sergeant Strong or whoever he was. And I liked their father-son thing, the foster-father thing. That's something that's very near and dear to my heart. I'm a foster kid, so I've gone through that. I have a very screwed-up family life where I have my siblings, my natural siblings, but I was raised in a foster home. And so that was something that I like, that dynamic, that he's inspirational to him, despite, you know, the grandfather being the original Steel, who I couldn't stand that character. Which he wasn't supposed to be liked anyway. He went from being a hero to an asshole.
Yeah.
And so when I got this entry, to me, this is the best interpretation of Steel I did. Better than what I drew originally. And the change in the costume didn't come from me. That came from Luke McDonald.
Right.
And I appreciated that. I didn't appreciate, well, again, I'm off the book. And this was one where I was asked to do it. They had asked me to do Vibe, and then I was really anti-Vibe. I couldn't draw. And with this, the only reason I drew is because of Dale Gunn. And as soon as they said, you can put Dale in there, I was cool. If I couldn't put Dale in there, I wouldn't have drawn it. I wouldn't have liked it. Or I wouldn't have liked it. And then what made it worse, Larry comes in and does this stellar inking job on it. So, like, okay, this is something I didn't like. And then Larry made it work. I was like, holy shit, isn't life weird? I hated this character. The character that's an avatar of me, I wasn't sure it was going to pull off. I didn't know if the flag was going to work. I didn't know if I had to sneak in the damn factory again. and sneak in Grandpa, or at least a version of Grandpa and him fighting in the old costume, which I was not sophisticated enough to make work. I mean, I was young. And so I liked what Luke did. He simplified it, made it work. And then, again, Larry inking it, beautiful job. And it's so weird to see something that you don't like that you have to go, wow, you know. It came together. That's the best. It's a happy accident. This was a happy accident.
It may not have been something that sang to you, but or meant a lot to you as you drew it, but it sang to us readers. Because I love the character of Steel, and I love the representation here. And I agree. I like what Luke did. Like, I love the open top on the mask. I think works really well. And I mean, that actually. All right, I'm gonna tangent for just a second. That had to be a little hard for you though. And now I'm thinking about designing this character because you were handed. Oh gosh, was it Don Heck or was it? The original design, right?
From Don Heck. Yeah, and Don made it work for Don. I just didn't relate to him.
Mm.
As Jerry was telling me, and I was trying to make it work. I mean, I got the whole $6 million man thing.
Yeah,
I think what bothered me was, and I still have a problem with that. You're making him, trying to make him Captain America. He isn't Captain America. So why are we going that way? Why couldn't we come up with something else?
Okay.
That made him more like, I would have liked it. I mean, it's funny because Legends, when he was on the Legends of Tomorrow show, they leaned more into a colossal approach to him, which I liked. I thought that made sense. But I had a hard time just trying to relate to him. It's just me. It's something, it's that thing where it's like, you know, some people like white socks, some people don't. It was my white sock. And even though, again, what Luke did broke it down and made it a much more less busy costume, it still was, it's just dull to me.
Yeah. And
so, and again, the dynamic I wanted, I never got to. But I have a story about that later. I'll get there when we get to the end.
Well, Justice League Detroit, right? As much as I love it, I did an interview with Jerry specifically about Justice League Detroit one time, and for me, it's a team of incredible promise that none of y'all were given the opportunity to execute.
I didn't know the infighting Jerry was getting because I was getting again. We were giving. We had an editor who was playing. I wouldn't say both ends against the middle, but. I went from this wonderful synergy with Lynn where I can come in and say, hey, can we do this? And if Jerry didn't like it, Lynn would play mediator and get it. Because the whole idea was, hey, if your artist likes it, if he can plus it, get out of the way and let him plus it. But I went from, here's the script, just follow the script. That was the edict I got. And then with Jerry was, hey, I want to try some things. And he was told, you got 5 minutes to do it. So both of us, I think, were very disappointed in how the book was being perceived. And we couldn't really do what we set out to do. And neither one of us was talking about it. I think if we did, it would have gave us a united front. If we weren't. And the other thought the other was kind of sabotaging, I think.
Mm.
I think Jerry would say sabotaging, but I wouldn't. And that's what made me eventually walk away. Like I said, when Wyatt came up, I was like, I'm not doing it. Give it to the new guy. And then when this came back, I didn't want to do it. But then I had this little ownership parent in me saying, look, you put a lot into the creation of Dale Gunn. So you got to put him in there. He is tied to Steel. So that little shot of Dale was my concession. And in the way it was inked, again, Larry just, was like, God damn, I wanted this to be, he shined the Shinola or whatever. He made it work. And I'm grateful for that. Very grateful. And it's painful memories, but this is like an exorcism too. That's why I'm glad to do the show. I'm a lot more forgiving and loving of this stuff because of your reactions and the reactions I've gotten from fans over this. It's just, I also like, as and often I like to tell the stories because I have a lot of young artists telling me, I didn't know I was allowed to do that, or I didn't know if I had this existence, if I'm the only one that has this experience. And I didn't have that then. So I tried to provide what I didn't have. That other's perspective of, hey, you know. At the beginning, I had that, but I didn't get it towards the end.
Well, we're thrilled that you sat on our metaphorical couch and had a chance to exercise some demons here. We've got one last entry here, right, Rob?
Yeah, Chuck, I think we've made a lot of progress with this session. We're here to...
I'm not boring you guys with my psychosis. You
know? No! What are you talking about, Chuck? So, okay. By the way, it does remind me, the Steel listing does remind me that it's a shame we didn't get a Dale Gunn listing. I know that right. Who's Who was not really doing supporting characters up until, you know, other than it was like a Lois Lane or Jimmy Olsen who starred in their own books. But like, it wasn't until later that they started doing Alfred and Commissioner Gordon and stuff like that. But you could have done a full on self-portrait at that point if they had done a Dale Gunn listing.
I think at that time, which is so funny because I got a surprise for you, but let's get to Tamaran and then I'll give you the surprise.
Okay. All right.
All right.
So, yes, Tamaran, of course, the home planet of Starfire and stuff. Now, of course, you were drawing Teen Titans at the time, but I have to fit, like, did you get more time to do this one simply because it's like probably 10 times the amount of work?
No, what I got. Well, here's the thing: it's timing, and it was like my last few JLA things. I always thought it was my last hurrah. It was definitely my last hurrah of the Titans. And Marv, as a gift, said, and this is the story that led into this. So I'm doing the last one, and it's, you know, we got like three artists drawing the book. You got Ed Barreto; he can't keep up. I think he inherited from. Or Garcia Lopez is coming. I can't remember where we stand in this. But Garcia Lopez is going to be in the mix. And we all felt, well, once Garcia Lopez touches the Titans, no one's going to touch this. Mm. That's another story. But in the meanwhile, Marv had me do a fill-in and taking up from where Ed left off, where they're all on Tamaran. And it's to Corey's going to get married to another guy. This is weird. Kind of Game of Thrones-y thing going on. Blackfyre has taken over and she's going to ruin the marriage. Oh, da, 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 da. And for some reason, Marv goes, well, since you're doing this, you should do the map of Tamaran.
Mm.
And I'm like, why? Because I got a surprise for you. I want you to do, I got a backstory that kind of sets up this whole wedding thing. Why is they're being forced to get married? And he wants me to, you know, he liked what I was doing. I want you to draw this. You know, this is you always tell me you want to do a space story. This is your Alex Raymond moment or Al Williamson moment. And I love Al Williamson. I love Alex Raymond stuff, the Flash Gordon stuff. So I'm doing this also, again, keeping George's designs in mind. And so I'm drawing that book, and then he goes, here's the backstory. And again, it's on that Baxter paper, beautiful paper. And it's Starfire's dad gets killed, and her, you know, we see how they now have to be married off to aliens. It's a really trippy story. But Marv goes, who you want me to have as inker? And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he goes, what's the sci-fi story, 60s sci-fi story? Why don't we ask Murphy Anderson?
Wow.
Wow.
What the hell? Hell yeah, buddy. So he gets Murphy Anderson to ink it. I thought Murphy was going to ink this. But Romeo did, and did a beautiful job. But Murphy got to do the story. Now is my last Titans. And beautifully done. I actually sold it off last year. Another one where I wished I was able to keep it, and I wasn't able to. But I got to keep it. I got Murphy Anderson, my favorite people. I mean, that was Murphy Anderson to me was DC sci-fi. And he got to ink that story and I was proud. And we got this. I got to do the entry for Tamaran. It was just trippy because, I mean, yeah, it was a lot of stuff in there. But all of them come from the stories. I mean, from the Titans. So I had reference. You know what I'm saying? As long as you have reference, you can draw anything. And I saw how George drew it, and I did it like George would have done it, in my mind. The weird part was doing Blackfire up there. Now, Romeo's inking it, so I can't. This Romeo established the way she looks. I'm happy with it, put it that way. It came together. So, but that was like my last, to my mind, my last entry on Who's Who.
Wow.
Well, it's stunning. The five inset panels, the different areas look fantastic. The little creatures and the waterfalls, yeah. And then the map itself. And then even the design elements up top with Blackfire, with the vertical and horizontal lines and the circle. It just looks fantastic. It's a stellar, no pun intended. Well, I guess maybe a stellar piece.
Well, it was meant to be stellar. I mean, it was meant to be this, you know, I mean, I never got a chance. That's why I loved about this, because this allowed me to, again, not just draw superheroes and GLA, or, you know, I got to do something, another different type of character. I didn't get a chance to do a lot of female characters. Or when I did, it was through Justice League or Titans. And it was just fun to kind of do the bad guy, you know. And so that was fun. I mean, to do a map. How many comics do you see we saw the map with the glossary of the world? And so I was channeling that. I was just having fun. It was kind of bittersweet knowing I was not going to get the book and putting all this work into it. But it was also nice to know, hey, I got a chance to do this book, and Marv did it in spirit of a gift. So, and getting, you know, I didn't get Murphy for this piece, but I got it for that one segment. And I'm, you know, I don't even know. I actually, when you guys were asking me, I had forgotten about this. I went on Google and said, oh shit, this thing. I forget. Did I draw that?
I did do that.
I did that, you know? And I did. And I remember making the notes showing, okay, we got to have these little arrows. I'm seeing they did it. And Romeo inked it just right. And again, Adrienne, beautifully done. She was so good. So good. I think she did. I'm sure she did. She would do a lot of the high profile stuff. And this was considered high profile also. So wow. that was it. Now, the surprise I was going to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned a young man's name on this show who has contacted me, and he's very tied into Who's Who. Osamu?
Yes. Isamu Yukinori.
Yeah, our pal.
I'm busting Osamu here, but I'm not going to show you. But Osamu specifically commissioned me to do a special Who's Who page for his Adam. You know, his.
Oh my God!
Know who he asked me to do?
Are you going to tell us, or leave us hanging?
I'm going to leave you hanging, but it's kind of, I'm doing a Dale Gunn page.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and I gotta be honest, I showed it to my girlfriend, and she went, "This is one of the best pages you've done." You know?
Oh my God.
Bless his heart. He told me about his dad, and I saw them. He sent me the books. That's what convinced me, because I get a lot of requests for things. And I wasn't sure I had it in me to draw Dale. I always felt like I dropped the ball on how I designed him anyway. And yeah, he looks like me. That's probably why. But I wanted more out of him. That was the problem, because, again, what I saw Dale being and what he wound up becoming in the comics was a huge, huge disappointment. He wasn't supposed to be some damn chauffeur. He was supposed to be their backup. He was supposed to be their human connection, more than just Mac and on Zatanna and Dixon. He was supposed to be, well, again, for Steel. I wanted him also to show... He was going to be the good dad to Aquaman's bad dad for Vibe. Again, he was that human element. I wanted him to be more than Rhodey. But I also wanted him... that was how I wanted to stretch JLA. We didn't have a Batman. We didn't have a Tony Stark. But I found a guy here who could grow into that. I didn't want him to be Mal. I want him to be his own guy. And I realized later, yeah, I made him to be the superhero. But the hard part is... Unless you're really given permission to kind of play it out, Jerry wrote it his way, and I didn't get anywhere near where I wanted to be. So when Osamu asked me to do him, his pitch was basically that. I want you to do it the way you imagined he was going to be.
That kid. Oh, my gosh.
That is the worst thing to tell an artist when they're like, you know, wait a minute, you want me to do it my way? And he's like, yeah. And we talked and we talked, and I wish I could show you. And I am very – right now we're in the process of getting it inked. It's going to be inked by a good friend of mine who inked some stuff of mine recently, an ex-DC artist named Roger Robinson, who inked and drew Azrael and Batman.
Oh, wow.
Roger and I have worked on some projects of mine, animation stuff. And I wanted – originally it would have been Art Nichols, but like we said, Art passed away. But Roger's wonderful. And I showed it to him. He was like, oh, my God. And it gave – put it this way, Asamu loves it, and we had talked about how to present it. I wish I could show you.
No, we'll wait to see it in the printed book.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, come on.
So is the Dale Gunn page going to be created?
The I don't know how much of the history he told you there. I mean, his father was part of our network. He was a podcast member in our network. Yeah. It was a dear friend of ours. And Asamu, we call him our nephew. He calls us his uncles. And actually, I'll ask you, can we include this on the air? Or is this supposed to be top secret?
Yes, yes. I mean, okay. I don't like the tease. I wish I can show you. I mean,
I don't want to see it. I want to see it when we get the book. It'll be so perfect.
Another reason I don't want to do it because it's Asamu's. I want him to, you know, premiere it in his book.
Yeah.
The other thing, there's two reasons. I mean, there's that. It wouldn't have been made of word for him. And I put in everything that I wanted to put in on him. The other side of it is, as much as I'm proud of those pencils, I have this problem of whenever I put my pencils up, people get in their head because it's on online that they're allowed to just take it and ink it. As I had explained to them, I have a PTSD about inking. If you're not my kind of guy or someone who follows my work, or I don't want to be here to be your practice dummy. So I'm keeping it off pencils until Raj can ink it, and then you can't stop everybody, but what I don't want to do is put up my pencils, and now you got 9 people deciding to do their inks on it. And I don't like that. I've already had a couple taken down from stuff I've done. I've done some Conan pieces I was really proud of, and some other things. And you can't stop everything, but I can let them know. Definitely if they start doing AI on you. And that was the reason I'm being vocal about it, because one guy decided to take some stuff of mine and put in AI without asking me.
Oh, that's
right. Oh, no.
Remember, I'm 70 now, so it's like, I don't give a shit, and I will come find you. So,
right.
So I'll be hobbling, I'll be old, but I'll come find you. I have no problems. And so far, I've gotten them taken down, but I don't want to encourage it. So this one is near and dear. This is the JLA page. This is the page I'm most proud of done of all the things I've done here. It's right up there. It's, to me, is even better than the Monmail. Now that I know what I'm doing, I'm looking at it. I even have steel in it.
Oh, perfect.
Wow.
And two other guests that you'll see and go, oh, I know why she's there.
Well, this is the perfect button on an amazing conversation. I mean, first of all, this amazing story career you've had, the amazing Who's Who entries you covered, now what you're creating today, throwing the Yukinori family legacy into this. This is incredible. Thank you so much for sharing the story with us.
You know, I mean, I wouldn't be here. And Rob, I told you this a long time ago. You guys are the ones that brought me back. You're the guys that brought my love back to comics. Never really loved, but you just reawakened it. And as grateful as I've been for my animation career, I wouldn't be here if it weren't for the comics. And now it looks like, now that I'm retired and everything, it's nice to go back and have fun when I couldn't do before.
Mm-hmm.
And Asamu's entry was exactly what I want to do, where I get to have fun with something that, if I was doing this officially from DC, good God, it would have given somebody to ink it who I would have been heartbreaking. I'm so looking forward to Roger inking it. It's going to be fun. I look forward to just penciling it. Again, Asamu, and knowing what his dad did, That's a loyalty that I feel like I'm honoring. You know,
he is his father's son for sure, and we'll mention, Chuck, that, like, you know, he does lots of Isamu does lots of great bonus stuff for the network without asking, and some of us are they don't even want to mention it to Isamu because they know he'll go do it.
Yeah,
and Shag and I don't worry about that. I'm like, do it, man. You want to make it? Go ahead, make it. And now to know that it's such a perfect Isamu / Zoom thing to do is to think of you, to think of, we never did a Dale Gunn. Let me reach out to the guy who created him and get him to do it. Like, that is such a Yukinori family kind of thing. So it's just, I'm just sitting here going, oh, of course. Of course he did that, because that's exactly what the Yukinoris do.
That's beautiful, because I wouldn't have done it. I really wouldn't have done it. I didn't want to. But the more he kept telling me, and I heard about his dad's story and this, I was like, dude, you're trying to, wait a minute.
It's amazing.
It's a legacy I can't ignore. And also I get, and that's the thing I owe him thanks. It lets me have that second chance with this. And like I said, I'm very, very freaking proud of what I drew. And now I'm done with Who's Who. You know, I mean, I can do anything now, but it's like, now I feel like that has been settled. My JLA has been settled. I've drawn Vibe and Vixen and Gypsy several times in commissions. That's settled, but Dale Gunn, this is the best Dale Gunn I've ever drawn.
Oh, man.
The way he wrote it, I'm reading, and again, kind of like in the old days, he gave me a certain format, which was tough. But it gave me flashbacks of, you know, this is what I would get. I would go in and it would tell me it's horizontal, it's this, it's that, and here's all the copy. And I tried to get him to take some copy out, but I got to admit, he covered everything. I was like, I can't tell him this is not do a great job. I wouldn't do this for one of my artists, so this is wrong. It's up to me to fit this. And we fit it. And again, worked with me with it. Because I'm doing this old school. I'm not doing this digital. And so there's a little adjustments here and there. He's been a charm to work with. I mean, he's wonderful. And I'm so proud to do this for him. And for me. This is fun. This was for me as well.
Oh, cannot wait to say it. Chuck, this is just such an honor that you did our show. We never thought when we started the Who's Who podcast 14 years ago that anyone would care about this. We thought Shag and I are going to be the only two people that listen to this. And it turns out it ended up like building the network because of the community that built up around it. And we're still getting new listeners for this show, for this, you know, comic that's 40 years old. Like, it's long out of continuity, and yet people still love it. So this was just such an honor to get to talk to you. So thank you just so much for doing this, man. I could not be more proud to have you on this show.
I was just going to say, I can't add any more than that, other than just to say thank you. And thank you for helping grow my love of Justice League and having this incredible conversation with you. It's meant the world to us. And I know the listeners are going to love it. And thank you so much, Chuck.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, I'm getting, again, messages from people who want to listen to the show now. I'm like, you got to talk to the guys, you know. But I mean, you got a following, man. You got a lot of people looking for, I mean, not just for me, just what you're doing. These are great books. I was looking at the omnibus the other day, and how it was a labor of love, despite all that. That's why I'm glad to have this Dale Gunn piece. To me, it's like, now I can go to my grave.
This is my God.
Whoa. Not now. I mean,
yeah,
I
not yet. Not yet, Chuck. Not
right,
yet.
Right. I understand what you mean.
I'm rushing too much to judgment.
I mean, you got to finish the piece, Chuck, first before you finish the piece.
But still be on Raj. Now I get to sit back and do the annoying thing I've done as a director is, you know, no, thicker, darker, this, no. You know, now I can sit on my rocking chair and let the younger guy do the job. But I know he's going to do a beautiful job. I mean, he loves the pencils, and Isamu loves the pencils. And that's all that matters.
Cannot wait.
Yeah.
Just cannot wait.
All right.
I'm shocked because I didn't, I mean, not to brag, anything was going to come together, and it did. It's like, okay, I'll shut up now. I'll let you end the show.
All right, man. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Across the DC multiverse, countless worlds exist in parallel, each with its own history, its own heroes, its own destiny. I'm DC Dave, and this is Infinite Earths, a guide to the DC multiverse, a travelogue Enfield Guide to the Worlds Beyond the Familiar. Each episode, we chart a different Earth, exploring its origins, its defining stories, and the cosmic architecture that shaped it. From the earliest multiverse experiments to the mythic forces that rewrote reality itself, every world has a place on the map. The Orrery is waiting. Join me. Let's explore.
Oh my gosh, that was unbelievable, Rob. That was so much fun. I had an absolute blast. What about you, buddy? Was that everything you were hoping for?
I make these kinds of comparisons in other interviews we've done, and it's, I wish I had like a new way of expressing it, but I'm not that creative. If you had told me at 12 years old that someday you will be interviewing the guy who is drawing your favorite comic book of all time, I would say that makes no sense. Those words don't make sense in that order. Those people live on Olympus. What are you talking about? And we have been fortunate enough to be friends with Chuck for a long time. I interviewed him back on my Aquaman Shrine blog and back in 2009. And this was something we always sort of hoped maybe we could do, but I just never had the guts to ask him. And then one night I just did. And he said yes. He was incredibly generous with his time. Great stories. Just a phenomenal guy, phenomenal artist. And boy, that was just the experience of a lifetime. Getting to talk to Chuck about his Who's Who entries, that's crazy.
It was incredible. Amazing experience. I got to just gush all over him and tell him thank you so much for making me a Justice League reader. But it was incredible. Now, folks, again, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Who's Who, the definitive podcast of the DC Universe. If you're new here, again, you can find all our back episodes on our website at firewaterpodcast.com or on any of your podcast service that you choose. And we do continue to release new episodes quarterly where we're revisiting the original series in a randomized way. And if you want to find more of Chuck, follow Chuck Patton on Facebook. Follow him on Instagram. He's always posting the coolest stuff, and he's such a nice guy. You won't regret it. And you can subscribe to the Who's Who podcast, as I mentioned, on your podcaster choice. But you can also find us on social media. We're on Blue Sky as FW Podcasts. We're on Facebook as Fire and Water Podcast Network. And we're on Instagram as Fire and Water Podcast. And again, huge thanks to Chuck Patton for coming on the show to discuss his time drawing entries for Who's Who. And our next episode will be in August of 2026. I'm excited, Rob. But there we're going to, what, cover 13 more random entries?
And I'm looking forward to it, but it won't be as exciting as this one.
Well, of course not. No, but
I just want to match the expectations for our new listeners who are coming. They're not every episode do we talk to a comic book and animation legend. Okay, this is what usually.
That's fair. It's fair, but you don't know what you're going to get because it's randomized. So that's fun. You never. We might even get a Chuck Patton entry next time. We'll have to see. But that's going to do it for this episode, folks. Until next time.
Who's next? No better at that.